Hello, everyone, and welcome to Weekly Monk Recap here on the 6th of April, 2016. I'm Nick, and Chris is here, too, and we are going to be talking about Shinsuke.
Oh, I was really relying on you to get this one right.
Well, whenever there's a U sound in a name, I'm tempted to, you know, shorten it, but UN sounds are way more difficult. So Shinsuke, it doesn't sound right. No, Iron Maiden. But we're going to be talking about the lyric, but, I have a little story to tell, Chris, first.
Ooh, you have the anecdote, all
right. I have an anecdote. Okay, so, as you can probably tell by looking behind me, I'm in an unfamiliar location currently. That's because I'm house-sitting for a couple of friends right now.
Ah. I thought you had a lot of rainbow-colored stickers behind you. It's like, Nick, it's awesome. Good for you, man.
So... and here's their cat. So, in order to get set, I went to the grocery store to grab a few things. And one of the things that can't be without, because I am the Prince of Pop-Tarts, so I had to get myself my Pop-Tarts. So I go to the store and I get that. And by the way, you can always tell when I'm getting food just for me, because it's like, sure, I could have chicken pot pies every day. Why not, you know?
There's no balance to this diet.
Like, if I ever went to, like, a foreign country, you know, I had to go to Europe for some reason, and people were like, suddenly Mr. Freeman is using his credit card in a completely different country. I wonder if this is a case of identity theft. Well, let's see, he went to the grocery store and he got Pop-Tarts, chicken pot pies, and vanilla Coke. No, that's still him.
He's good.
So I get a few things, and which includes my Pop-Tarts, and then later on, it's like, all right, time for a Pop-Tart, and I reach into the box and I pull out, you know, because they come in, you know, wrappers.
Yeah, they come in like the 2 per pack sort of deal.
And so pull out.
Unless they've gravely changed the the Pop-Tart packaging since when I was eating them.
So I pull it out like this, and. Because I'm the Prince of Pop-Tarts, I'm like, wait a minute, this feels wrong.
It feels like you pulled them out, you're like, this doesn't feel.
Because I can feel the texture of the Pop-Tart through the wrapper. And I'm like, I feel sprinkles on this. Brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts don't have sprinkles on them. And so, I'm like, well, that's kind of weird, but maybe, you know, maybe the icing or frosting or whatever you would call them, it's just kind of distributed weirdly on this one. That's what I'm looking at. But then I look at the box, and I'm like, oh, crap, I've gotten the wrong kind by mistake. Not only did I get the wrong kind, I got chocolate fudge Pop-Tarts by mistake.
Oh, you just saw brown and you're like...
This kind... I could have gotten, because if you're not familiar with me on this aspect of me, I hate chocolate.
You can't stand it.
I despise chocolate. So I got chocolate Pop-Tarts. I'm not going to do anything with these. Like, if I, like, mistakenly gotten, like, strawberry, blueberry, even cherry Pop-Tarts, I'd be like, well, it's still Pop-Tarts, whatever, I'll eat it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to eat chocolate, though.
It's not just, you got chocolate covered in chocolate Pop-Tarts.
Exactly. There's a small fudge Pop-Tarts. With
like, I think somewhere around there, there's a little bit of, like, graham cracker for the crust, but otherwise it's just chocolate layered on chocolate.
So, I told that story because I thought it was ridiculous that I have this ability to sense that something is wrong just by feeling the Pop-Tarts in my hands.
Oh, there's a disturbance in the force.
Exactly.
What I love more is that you apparently grab Pop-Tarts out of the box like you're drawing Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Like, I was expecting you with 2 fingers to be like,
wait a minute, this card cannot help me.
This isn't the card I wanted, but I'll play it anyway.
I've managed to draw Ship Snatch by mistake.
Oh, Kaiba, you put a card in my deck. Now you have to eat chocolate Pop-Tarts, Nick.
You were calling me out like, Chris ate those beans. You can eat the Pop-Tarts. Said, fuck you! Chris suffers for, 6 beans. Do you know how much 12 Pop-Tarts is?
I mean, that's a lot of Pop-Tarts, But not for nothing. Those beans made me vomit by the end of it.
Well, you didn't know.
There was like five skunk sprays in a row, Nick.
You didn't know you were going to suffer every single time. Well, until you...
And there was a small glimmer of hope, but after the third skunk spray, I was like, this isn't happening. These are all bad flavors.
When you got the black, when you got the black ones, you're like, okay, I'm going to dislike this either way. But still, it's that versus this 12 times, yes. Knowing every time is going to be something I hate. Fuck off, I'm not eating them.
I mean, I'll be completely honest. I don't mind chocolate at all. I still think I would start hating those Pop-Tarts after, like, Pop-Tart 2.
Those people in the chat room are like, fucking eat it. For what?
I don't know.
I'm not getting anything for this. I've already entertained you with my magical Pop-Tart detection powers.
We've now just... Oh my god, Nick, we just discovered your side effect.
Exactly.
You're going to be in a World Trigger, and your thing's like, he can tell Pop-Tarts without taking them out of their packaging. Like, he's just like, it seems like a hot fudge sundae. 2008, good year. Not a good year for Pop-Tarts, though.
That is sense related, so yeah.
I think it makes perfect sense. They'll be like, I don't know how this helps make you a better sniper, but...
It's like, I hate that kind of Pop-Tart!
Oh, you got me again! Ninomiya!
Oh, God.
Nick, did you want to comment at all? Since this is a wrestling podcast that occasionally talks about manga, do you want to make any comments on WrestleMania?
I missed a lot of WrestleMania because the network wasn't working when it was going on for me. So I did catch some of it later. My favorite part was the fact that, because I was napping during it, so I kind of, you know, poked my head up at one point and saw the tweet you had sent me where you're like, okay, Nick hasn't commented about the New Day's entrance. Obviously, he's dead.
Yeah. I was like, all right, the New Day just came out of a box of cereal in fucking Dragon Ball Z outfits. If Nick isn't commenting on this, something must be wrong.
I like how everyone has, they came out dressed like Saiyans, and I'm like, obviously they're wearing the Ginyu Forces armor. They have the badge, you fucking plebs.
Yeah, stupids.
Xavier is dressed as Vegeta, that's true, but they are not wearing Saiyan armor, they're wearing Ginyu Force armor. Come on. And it was never the Saiyan's armor, it was Frieza's army's armor.
Nick fronting, take that, dickheads.
Saiyans. You don't know actually what we're talking about. At least whenever Xavier Woods makes a nerdy reference, you know he's such a dork that it's actually accurate.
Yeah.
It was really annoying whenever he was just like, I was trained by Zack of the Power Rangers. It was like, you seem very fake, nerd. But it was like, no, you are definitely a real nerd. Yeah, it's... You've definitely
painfully been... obvious now if it wasn't before.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. That main event, though. Oh, God. Anyhow, yeah, that's basically all I wanted to note there. So, we're going to go from talking about Pop-Tarts to wrestling to virgin metal demons, I guess? I don't know exactly how to describe what the main character is.
She's the metaphor, Nick.
She's the metaphor. Shinsuke no Iron Maiden is the manga recommendation we took, and I have the two main characters' names in front of me, because otherwise I'm not going to remember them.
Mayama and Tsukiko.
Right. But I read this series like a week ago, so like 2 weeks ago almost at this point, so I'm a little bit hazy on that. Basically, the premise is that in this world that the series takes place in, it is an otherwise normal world, except one in roughly every 1,000 young girls will have this condition, which causes them to grow strange metal plating around parts of their body. And, of course, because it is a form of armor on a female, it is... highly impractical, and only barely covers the naughty bits when it surrounds them. So, one of our two main characters, Himemiya Sukiko, is one of these transforming girls, and her childhood friend, Mayama Haruki, whom she's been on the outs with of late as they've, you know, gone through puberty and such, discovers her secret. And the manga is mostly about them trying to keep the secret of her transformation, because if it comes out that she's this girl, then she's going to be taken away by some mysterious branch of the government. And they don't know exactly what's going to happen to her, but she's pretty sure it will be bad stuff. And, of course, it's also, there's also a romantic element between the two of them. It's primarily about the dynamic between the two characters. Tsukiko being essentially a perfect girl. Like, she's, you know, part of the, you know, school's student council. Whereas Haruki is a troublemaker and a tremendous pervert. But they're, like, 13, so whatever. That's basically the setup. We were recommended this as a bad series.
It was recommended this as a weird series, but I believe the recommendation started coming in after you had like mentioned at the start of the year that we'll take bad suggestions and weird suggestions too. So I don't think it was recommended to us because it's like freezing necessarily, but the impression I got is that the person suggestion that thought it was really weird.
It's a bit weird.
I feel only the initial couple chapters are weird. Because I didn't know what to expect going into it, because I hadn't read the email again in a while, so I actually did think it was just supposed to be bad. Especially once I clicked the, you know, I looked into the series, I was like, oh, it's like a Arrow series a little bit. Like, usually that sort of stuff goes hand in hand with being kind of bad. And the first chapter is, it's a little bit of a mix at the start, because it focuses on this joke that the boys are completely mystified about what women go through in puberty. Like, they just don't get it. Like, why did these girls who were so cool before start suddenly not liking playing in the dirt and punching each other? This sucks! And, like, they don't get, like, what a period is. Like, what the menstrual cycle is. Because they'll see, like, a girl who's not in swim class and, you know, all the other girls are like, oh, it must be her special day. And they're like, what special day? Is it, like, a birthday? Like, they're just fucking idiots. Like, no one told them anything.
Sex that doesn't exist in this world, apparently.
But, well, that's almost part of the joke, is that everyone thinks they were like, all the girls had to go to a conference. And that's when, like, me as the reader, I'm like, oh, like, some kind of, you know, like, the sex, you know, conversation. Sex ed, a sexual education class that, for some reason, was just one day long, and it got everything covered.
Well, that was how sex ed worked when we were first introduced to it very briefly when I was a kid. They separated the girls off from the boys. The girls watched, you know, the female part of the video. The boys watched the male part of the video. Basically, it was just like, your body is going to be going through these changes. And it was like done for like, you know, one day. And then later on, sex ed came up in a different grade.
A bit jaded on this because I came from Catholic school, so we had the same separation, but we got it kind of all at once, and it was all like, Jesus doesn't like your boners, stop getting them.
Of course.
I'm just like, can Jesus stop judging me on my boners, Father Mahoney, please? But
Jesus is kind of
he's a little bit picky. I'm not cool with this. So like the thing is that the main character in this first chapter is just he seemed exactly like what the kind of lead I'd hate. Like, just a big pervert, just kind of a dickhead. He reminded me a lot of, like, the chapters of Prison School. Like, just that crude, very gross kind of attitude. And when they suggest, like, oh, the main female character is having her special day because she's having cramps, he's like, I'm gonna go follow her. And I was like, oh, God. If this is a series where, like, he, like, walks in on her and her period, and this becomes, like, the hook of the series and something like that, I'm going to lose my goddamn mind. And then he fucking encounters her, and I'm like, oh no, it's he discovered that she's a metal dragon monster. And I'm like, alright, I'm back on board with this. Let's see where this one's going.
Right. I mean, the entire first chapter basically sets up like, oh, they're talking about periods. And it turns out they are talking about
periods. They are.
But
yeah,
it just happens that Tsukiko's period, Kiko's period involves her growing metal plating around her body, because that is what these transforming girls do. It's like, that's just part of their adolescence. And the Shitsuki, no, part of, or Shishunki God, it's, I don't know how to pronounce this. The part that's not Iron Maiden in the title is the Japanese word for adolescence or puberty. Mm-hmm. So it is, you know, the adolescence of the Iron Maiden. This is a weird series in a couple of respects because it plays with the idea of perversion in a weird way, because it's not a super etchy series.
No,
there are definitely points where, you know, because, you know, essentially every single time that Tsukiko is transformed, you know, she grows these sharp metal plates out of her body. She can't be wearing clothes, really. Mm-hmm. Because they, you know, get torn off of her. So every time she's transformed, she's basically naked, and she's got this form-fitting metal around her body. So there is an erotic element to it in that. But it's not as if, you know, Haruki every 5 seconds is tripping and falling into her crotch. There's not a tremendous number of panty shots.
There's no real after the start, even some of the the metal transformations stop even really being cheesecakey, and they kind of just have to explain things as they're going on. It's not a series that relies heavily on being etchy after a while, and while it still has some of those elements, it usually then starts becoming more about being played for laughs.
And it's weird because although Haruki starts off as this tremendous pervert, eventually, basically, perversion is portrayed as a villainous quality. All of the major villain characters are tremendous perverts. And Haruki's transformation into a good guy is about downplaying his perverted nature. But at the same time, naked girls are showing up in this series, just covered in metal. It's not quite on the same level as Freezing's tremendous hypocrisy when it comes to, you know, wanting to play Satellizer's trauma for dramatic effect when it's, you know, sexually related, and then having her being sexually harassed for comedic effect in the present of the series. Not nearly on that same level. But is a little bit weird how it's played out in the series. And, this is a weird series for me to kind of get my head around, because it's not super bad. I'm not even sure I would say it is bad, but it's not good, I don't think. There are parts of it that I was super into for a little while, and then I can tell you the exact time, but we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
I can tell you the exact point where I was like, okay, nope, and it never redeemed itself from there, because it had to rush towards conclusion after that storyline was done. But there were definitely points, up until roughly halfway to maybe two-thirds through the series, where I was really getting into the series. And I was like, I want to see what happens next. I want to see how this plays out. I want to see, you know, how the relationship between Haruki and Tsukiko advances. Because Haruki proves himself to be a really strong ally to Tsukiko. Because she has to play the part of the perfect girl in this school. She has things that she wants to accomplish while she has to put up with, you know, being burned with this secret. And Haruki helps her. And he ends up, over time, putting her needs ahead of his own. So there are points where he deliberately gets himself into trouble and plays up the fact that he's a bad student, you know, who gets into mischief and stuff, so he can take the fall for her, essentially. Uh-huh. And you start to really get to like him because of that. There is one point where he gets jealous and slaps her, and it's like, well, he's going to have to do something to redeem himself for this.
Well, here's the thing. I think we're going to have a little bit of a differing opinion on this series, because I actually came out with a pretty positive opinion of this series, though I can fully admit the series has a lot of issues, and the biggest is probably the fact that the series is ultimately one giant metaphor for puberty. It's symbolic of it in pretty much every way. It's just masked in a story about this girl who transforms into things. And that's honestly the worst part of the series. It's the anchor that kind of weighs it down, because when it's just there as to be this mystery that helps these two kind of grow closer together, it's completely fine. It's ignorable, but it serves its purpose of getting these two characters and building their relationship. It's when you start having to actually think about the logistics of it, and then once they start explaining the logistics of it, that you're like, this is fucking preposterous.
Like, I completely agree. It works great as a hook, but you're complete. I am completely in agreement with you. When you get into what the organization that's trying to, you know, bring in these transforming girls, what their goal is and what they're trying to do, it's stupid.
You sit there and you're like, they must be weaponizing me somewhere, right? Like, no, I don't think so.
Like, their goal that they ultimately have is the stupidest shit.
I didn't actually see, maybe I blinked and missed what their end goal was.
I want to go through the three major, what I consider arcs, because we've got, you know, three villains, basically, that we go through.
Let me just finish up with, I was on a point and I lost it. I'm thinking, oh no, and this is another question I have, and I just want to get out the start. Did they mention if something happened with her family, Tsukiko's, at any point in time? Because the question I had early on,
she mentions that she's on her own.
Okay, because she lives in a house alone. She's next door neighbors with Mayama, and they mentioned like growing up in a crib together, but she lives on her own now.
Right.
But she didn't have parents, and I was like, well, wouldn't you just talk to your parents if you have this condition?
I can't remember if they died or what happened. Like I said, it's been like 2 weeks since I read the series, and that's a detail that's not really built up.
I don't think it may have been brought up briefly and then just doesn't seem to be brought up again. At least I didn't notice it when it was brought up again. I mean, in my mind, I started to rationalize, I was like, maybe this is also part of the puberty allegory. Like, I can't talk to my parents about these things. It's too rough. But then I'm like, yeah, but in this world, puberty is actually like you get kidnapped and taken away to a fucking secret government lab to presumably be experimented on. So I feel like you'd want to talk to them. But, we can go into talking about the villains who, right, I will admit, are all just terrible.
Pretty bad. So our first villain, I forget what the glasses girl's name is, the one who's in charge of the government. She's the main antagonist of the whole thing.
I don't even know. They call her Chief, but I'm trying to think. Her name's barely mentioned because everyone just refers to her as Chief.
She is the head of this branch of the government, this agency, which is bringing in these transforming girls. And apparently she, like, goes, like, around the country in order to give the same conference to all these girls, which is, you know, once in every 1,000 cases, you know, when a girl reaches puberty, you know, she starts to grow these metal plates. So, you know, if, you know, that ever happens, you know, you just need to tell the teacher, you can tell us and we'll help you out. And the entire reason that, Tsukumi, did I already fuck up her name? God.
Tsukiko.
The entire reason that she knows not to do this is because her friend was a transforming girl, and she saw her basically tell this to the chief. The chief got this really crazed look on her face, and
never saw her again.
Never saw her again.
Supposedly moved away, but never talked to anybody. No, Anthem.
So Tsukiko knows, obviously, they're lying. I can't, you know, risk telling anyone this secret. The chief shows up again after, basically what happens is the third most important character in the series is a girl in the year below the two main characters.
No, now.
And she gets a crush on, I've forgotten his name now too. God damn it.
Mayama.
She gets a crush on him, because of some stunt that he pulled in order to protect Tsukiko's secret. She ends up randomly stumbling across one of the plates that has come out of Tsukiko's body, and is like, because whenever the transformation reverts, they don't go back in her body; they shed
off. Yeah,
and she's been very careful about you know, picking up all the scales and taking them like to an iron processing center so that they can be secretly disposed of. But this time she managed to get her hands on it for a little while. And she's like, oh, I found this weird plate. Yo, I'm going to post a selfie and on Instagram and all that stuff. So even though they managed to eventually recover the plate, because they're like, they could do DNA testing on it somehow, they managed to get rid of it. But the picture was put out. The government discovers it, so they know to go to that school. They show up and they're like, if anyone knows anything about a transforming girl, then... and just when it looks like they're going to have to leave soon, one of the teachers is like, I'll discover proof of this if you, you know, promise me a reward. And they're like, yeah, sure. And turns out this guy...
the guidance counselor of the school. No.
Has been secretly recording the girls' locker room. And it is explicitly stated that he jacks off to it, too. Like, because what ends up happening is he's going over the footage, and this is how he discovers Tsukiko's secret. And so he's like, I will play this footage so that it's revealed who Tsukiko is. And somehow, the wrong file ends up playing. It shows, you know, just no footage from the girls' locker room. They're like, oh my god, he's a pervert. And then they also see somehow his webcam was turned on during one of his beating sessions. And so everyone's like, ah! You know, fired,
like that moment arrested. And the moment of him like, why didn't I watch this first to be sure?
Exactly.
Why did I do this in front of the whole school?
So Haruki and Tsukiko are like, well, how did this happen? Because neither of us messed with this. And they realize that it's like, someone must have messed with this, but they don't know who it was. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. You know, a guy managed to somehow discover the guidance counselor's secret and switch the files out. Did he also make sure to remotely turn on the webcam so that his jerk-off session was recorded too?
Yeah. I mean, the dude's American Psycho. I'm sure he could have figured it out if he needed to.
That's very much it, yeah. So that's the first arc. They keep on going with the secret, and Tsukiko's basically states to Haruki that her goal is just to make it to a certain point in the school year, until, like, the school festival. And because she wants, she's, you know, waiting until that time to confess to her crush.
Well, it's because it got so close that she realizes how limited her time is. Like, she could get caught at any moment. So she's like, and she almost gets caught during it. Like, there's a point where she has to admit to it to basically protect someone else who's going to get caught. And in that moment, yeah, she's like, got to confess my love.
Basically, what happened, I completely forgot about that, but Nona basically gets the idea that in her head that Haruki is obsessed with transforming girls, and she thinks that is fetish, so she decides to reveal herself as the transforming girl, and of course this is, you know, incorrect, but... So to protect her, Tsukiko is like, no, it's actually me. I'm the transforming girl. But all the other students are like, Tsukiko is doing this to protect her. You know, this is what a good person, you know, she is.
What a saint.
So we have an I'm Spartacus moment for, like, all the girls who are there for this scene are all like, I'm the transforming girl. I'm the transforming girl. And they're all trying to protect each other. And because of this, because the entire, basically, student population of the school is doing this to, like, well, we don't fucking know who it is then, you know? It's not like we could take the entire female student population of the school with us. I thought it was actually quite admirable.
Yeah, no. Carry on.
And also, it really played into Sugiko's character. It's like, this is, you know, what a good person she is. She's so liked because of, you know, the way that she acts around these people that, you know, this...
She's earned their respect. Like, she's not she's not putting in half days or anything like that. Her classmates love her because she's a very good person who helps everybody out.
And it's really built up because during the whole witch hunt, basically, for this transforming girl, these students are turning every little bit of rumor on each other that they possibly can. And it's getting to the point where people are paranoid. They're like, I don't want to do anything suspicious, you know, because people are going to, you know, might think that I'm going to be the transforming girl. There's literally a moment, which is pretty gross, where a girl wets her pants in the classroom because she's like, if I take too many bathroom breaks, people are going to get suspicious of me. It's like, oh, God, that's disgusting and fetishy.
How frequently are you taking bathroom breaks that you can't, like, you're like, if I take one more, I'll be found out, but I just can't hold, I'll just piss myself.
You're like, how many are you taking the day? Is it one or is it 50? And you needed that 50th. But, you know, during that whole time, she was being supportive of everyone. So,
yeah.
Anyhow. We have that I am Spartacus moment for Nanoa. Then Nishima is the senpai that Skika has the crush on. She confesses to him. And at this point, Haruki gets jealous because his feelings for Skika have been growing this whole time. And he's been doing a lot of stuff for her. He's been sticking his neck out for her. All of a sudden, you know, she's confessing to Shima. So he decides to be a pretty big jerk at this time. But he's 13.
Yeah.
And he's hormonal and emotional.
I like this scene a lot for what it seems to suggest. Because there's definitely a level of earnesty to this series that I find admirable. It doesn't play into too many cliches in some ways. It hits some in others, but when mm-hmm. it came to this, it was a situation where this is a guy who just had his heart broken in front of him.
Uh-huh.
And you'd like to think, like, maturely, like, well, you hang your head low, you get a good cry out, and you buck up, and there's plenty more fish in the sea. It's like, no, a lot of
He's
people...
He's 12.
When you get your heart broken, you get angry, and you try to do the meanest thing you can to the person who did it, just because, you know, you regret it immediately afterwards, but just that attitude of just being like, oh, I can't, like, you have no way to express yourself, because he's a kid who doesn't know how to swallow his feelings. He has no way to deal with his feelings, so when he gets conflicted, he tends to act out, and he tends to overblow his brash, pervasive personality. So, like, the moment it happens, he's like, oh, you gonna enjoy these big old titties then? And you're like, oh, I see what's happening here. Like, you kind of see where this guy is going. Because you've seen enough for him to know who he is at his core, but you've also kind of seen his faults, too. So it's a character I find more interesting in a romantic sort of series than someone like Araku. Someone who's just a blank slate with a couple of perfect, admirable qualities all the way through. Mayama has a lot of flaws, and mm-hmm. that scene shows just how much growing up he has to do. Now,
right.
It's not a perfectly done scene, because his action isn't like I've had moments where after a breakup I want to like be like, you filthy bitch, or something like that. He doesn't say something, he actually physically does something, and that's really fucked up. And
well, what happens is Tsukiko slaps him because uh-huh. he's being a jackass, and he backhands her.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, my gender equality side says she hit him first, but he also deserved it because he was being a real jackass. He retaliated, so therefore his violence and being a jerkiness still means he's in the wrong. It's not the matter. It's not like, because, you know, I think that if you get hit and it's not deserved, you have the ability to hit someone back. He deserved that slap. So
it was a situation where he came out looking bad. And I like what happens afterwards, because it's the action I still didn't agree with, but the consequence of it, seeing his thought process, like the pure, unadulterated panic and regret he feels afterwards,
yeah.
and guilt, it's done in a way that you're like, all right, this is destroying this kid. Now, he's a little bit unstable in that he's, like, falling down. He's got, like, a huge bleeding gash on his head. But just seeing him go through these emotions, I'm like, all right, I can get this. I feel like the mangaka here is a good writer. I think maybe it wasn't the perfect execution of what he was going for. But I'm behind this far more than I am 90% of the same kind of, like, romantic stuff we get in something like Fairy Tale or something like that, where there's just, you know, gratuitous fan service mixed with, like, wholly perfect and innocent relationships. Like, I get this.
It was a very you know, understandable breakdown that he has. And there's even, like, you know, thought bubbles you have while he's saying all this really mean shit where he's like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I saying all this stuff? Because he realizes what he's doing is wrong, but he's so caught up in his emotions that he just can't stop it from pouring out.
And you dislike, like, that's the moment where I start disliking him again. I'm like, I don't, this kid, if this is going to end with them getting to back together, then he needs to, essentially, like, it needs to be, like, an earned progression back into a relationship. It can't just be, like, you know, the next day he's like, hey, sorry about that, but man, you could really take a good mean left hook.
Oh, God. So, it turns out that Mishima knows Tsukiko's secret already, which stops Parky's, you know, kind of like, this is how I'm going to get back at her thing. It's like, I'm going to blow your secret to him. And he's like, oh, I already know about it. He's like, huh? Yeah, I was the guy who stopped the guy's counselor's plan. It's like, oh, all right. And so, basically, he says to Haruki, this is the real reason why Haruki gets so angry. It's not because Tsukiko's confessing to him. It's because Mishima basically says, you know, Haruki, you've, you know, done a good job, but, you know, you don't have to do this anymore. You know, I'll be the one that she, you know, keeps her secret with. You know, I'll help take care of her and protect her secret.
You've done well thus far, but I'll take it.
You run along and masturbate now. And so Haruki, you know, of course, gets really pissed off about this because, you know, he's just suddenly being, not just having to give up his love for Tsukiko, he's just being cut out of the situation entirely. Which, that's a much more understandable, I'm really pissed off about this situation. So, Mishima and Tsukiko go off together while Haruki wallows in grief and guilt. Nanoa shows up to try and cheer him up slash win his love and be the rebound.
There's actually one scene between them that's probably my favorite in the series. And it's Mayama has gone up onto the roof of the school, and he's just kind of venting. Mm-hmm. And Nao shows up, and she's like, oh, I like it up here on the roof, because if you go up to the top there, you can cry and nobody can see you. And Mayama's like, I'm not fucking here to cry, all right? That's, you know, whatever. And they have a little bit of a back and forth. And he looks down from the roof, and he sees Tsukiko with the new guy, whose name I don't know. He sees the two of them together, and he sees them in a happy relationship. And you see just a small moment of him starting to tear up, and then the view pulls away, so you only see the school in a silhouette. And you're like, oh, you know, we can't see him cry up there. It's true. It's
right.
It's a moment that where I'm like, this isn't, you know, world-ending writing, but it's sweet and romantic in a way that you're like, all right, there's an earnest talent here and an earnest feeling to this that I can completely get behind. It's moments like that where I'm like, this could be a really good series. It's sprinkled around some less, you know, appealing moments, but moments like that were the ones that left the best impression, or the biggest impression on me, I should say.
Right. There is a really good series kind of lying underneath the surface here, and you can see it really pop up in certain moments. Now, let's see. I mean, like, Nanoa and Haruki and Mishima and Tsukiko go out on simultaneous dates that, like, cross over at a certain point, and neither of the girls want their dates to see that the others are there, because it'll be super awkward. And so, like, Nanoa is trying to cheer up Haruki the whole time. She basically, like, tries to convince him to sleep with her, it seems like.
I mean,
or at least make out with her.
She states very openly from the start of the series that she's fine if the only thing he's interested in her for is her body.
Yeah, it's... She basically throws herself at him. Mm. And she's like, come on, you know, why can't you love me instead of Tsukiko?
She's one step from being that fucking the other girl in Freezing. You're like, why are you here? You're fucking super... She just doesn't have an annoying verbal tick.
But that makes all the goddamn difference.
She's so much more tolerable by the fact she's in her senses of like, oh, but don't you love me? Do you get a Minosu?
You actually remember it. So, Haruki gets a call from Tsukiko at this moment. Meanwhile, over at Nishima's pad, where Tsukiko
is. This is so fucked up. Like, it's...
This is where the series goes into, yeah, this is bad. Like, all the good things I've had to say is like, I'm sorry, no. Because Tsukiko is taken to Nishima's place because it's raining, and she, you know, can't just go all the way home. She needs a place to stay for a bit. And I forget exactly why, but she ends up looking underneath his bed.
She goes into his room. He wants to do the metamorphosis study with her because he's like, you won't have him anymore. So she starts to, like, undress and, like, prepare. Like, he's turned his back, and she's...
This is something that we haven't actually talked about. There have been parts in the series because Tsukiko is also trying to understand her transformation, but, you know, she doesn't have anyone to go to.
She can't see her back.
Right.
Like, that's part of it.
And so, yeah, because she can't see her back in order to study it, Haruki basically studies her. And it's these very tender moments between the two, because she's, you know, completely exposing herself to him and trusting him to, you know,
do actual physical study and not be like dead ass for 8 pages straight.
Because, you know, she gets naked in front of him and he studies her and stuff. Nishima is basically going to do that.
But she has too many feelings about Mayama. And she's like, I can't. Like, he turns around, she's fully dressed again. She's like, I just can't. He's like, all right, well, I'll go make some tea and warm us up. And then she's like, oh, hey, what's this? Oh, hey, your period journal.
Well, it's not the period journal.
Oh, sorry, not period journal.
It's
your virginity taking.
Blood.
Yeah.
He is apparently obsessed with virgins and deflowering virgins. And he has kept the sheets that their virginal blood spills on and put them in a photo album.
Literally cut the sheet around there and just, like, pastes it in a fucking, like, journal. Oh, it's so fucked up.
So...
And he's like, you've discovered it! My only due cause is to now rape you and take your blood so that I can continue adding to my journal.
So, yeah, he's like, oh, crap, you've discovered it. Oh, well... Because he was planning on drugging her with the tea, but of course she's refusing now. So he takes out a taser, stuns her, knocks her out, ties her up, and she has, like, an unwilling transformation. So he's like, and now I shall rape you. And he goes on this long rant where, you know, of course he goes from, you know, looking like this to looking like this! And it goes on and on about how his one goal in life is to see the moment when the pure maiden is forever corrupted and torn and has their virginity taken from them. And, you know, that's what his existence is for, is to see the heavenly perfect purity taken away from an earthly creature. And it's like, ugh. And she's like, that's really messed up. He's like, what are you talking about? This is a wonderful goal in life. The only thing that nice that I had to say about this whole sequence, which is fucked up beyond all belief, is she says, wait, this is, like, why you want to go out with me? And he's like, yeah, this is what, since the first moment I met you, I have wanted to do this with you. And so she has this memory that she repeatedly thinks of when, you know, she was first showing up to the school, and she was really nervous about giving a speech, and he was really nice to her and helped her to get through it and stuff. And that memory, you know, pops up again, and then suddenly shatters because he's ruined that memory for her. It's a really cool little effect. Anyway, Haruki manages to get a call from her because she manages to, like...
She basically has her cell phone still, and this is before she's, like, been fully tied up so she can still use her legs, and basically just dials him and prays he'll answer. And then he, like, the serial killer guy, like, sees, like, oh, you're trying to make a phone call. Well, it'd be weird if I just hung up abruptly after he's answered, so I'll just be like, hey, she says, F off, loser, peace, click. And that's when, Mayama's like, you know, for as Tsukiko is, she's honest, and she would never go through somebody else to do something like this, so something's wrong.
She would tell me to my face, or at least with her own voice, you know, what she feels. So he races off to the rescue. turns into a bit of a badass for that one sequence. Because he, like, is riding his bike through the storm, he slips and he falls on the roof. There's, like, a skylight, which is the only way into the room, and he headbutts his way through it. And I forget exactly how he manages to take out Shinsuke with his fucking stun gun, but he manages to do it.
I think he just takes... I don't think it's even, like, that crazy of a take. I think he just takes him down and drops the taser. I mean, it's just some douchebag with a taser. I guess he's not really, like, a mastermind.
No. But he manages to save the day, and the very first thing he does to Sukiko is he apologizes for being a jerk to her. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, it was big, cliche, dumb rescue moment, but it's nice that the first thing he does is to apologize for what he's done. Not to, hey, you're safe. It's just...
Yeah, not like, look at me, the big, strong hero, the big penis that came in to save you.
The very first thing that he does is, I'm sorry, and he tries to set things right. Now, I think at this point, the manga was getting canceled or something. Because we very suddenly go through our final arc.
Yeah, like, very quickly then, it's about probably, like, 10 chapters left at this point. And, like, basically, literally, as soon... Because this is also where he admits that he has feelings for her, too. Like, he says, like, I like you. I think he even says, I love you. And they're, like, leaving the house together. They're like, this is great. And literally, the fucking government just shows up and they're like, take you! Yoink! You get out of here! We're ending this quickly! You've been wondering what the fuck this dragon bullshit is? You're about to find out and be disappointed.
How'd you find out who she was? And how did you know where to find her? Shut up!
The internet!
We're reading the series online too.
Yeah. Nice job smashing right through that window there.
I love she's Sasuke no Iron Maiden, or however the fuck you pronounce it. So the chief, of course, is there, and she's super creepy. Sukiko demands the entire time that she's at the facility that she wants to see Haruki, and Haruki keeps on showing up. He's, like, trying to break into the facility where she's being held in order to see her. And so they're like, we'll let you see each other. And so Sukiko gets in there, and she's like, oh, everything's fine here. You know, they help us to understand our transformation. We, you know, are just studying, and we're, you know, being taught, you know, how to deal with it, and they, you know, make sure to monitor us. The chief keeps on staring at our gooches in order to... Which I am dead certain. She probably made some bullshit excuse, and it has nothing to do with the transformation. She just wants to look at preteen vaginas.
Can I take
a pervert?
Can I take the big twist coming up here about what they're doing? So
go ahead.
Throughout the whole series, whenever you get a color page of Tsukiko's dragon or, you know, armor form, it's this black kind of iron that juts out of her. But it's made a plot point early on that Mayama sees a small, different colored part of her armor. And it's like
it's almost like, you know, there's crystal, and then as he's staring at the stuff that you can't see, he's like, oh, there's like this pink crystal.
Yeah, there's one little part that's pink. And as the series goes on, it continues to grow, and more of the black stuff is taken over by the pink stuff.
Which is concerning to Sukiko, because like, why is it different now?
Yeah, I don't hear about this in the reports and stuff like that online. What am I, like, a special thing beyond even a special thing? So he goes to meet her. She is, you know, more or less normal. The only thing she's kind of odd about is, like, seemingly having no regrets about saying goodbye to all of her classmates. But then Mayama, like, specifically says, like, I love you! And she's like, oh, well, I don't hate you either. And that's when he's like, I expected the extreme. There's no way there'd be a middle ground. Right. And that's when they realize...
It's almost like he says, you know, I love you. And she says, oh, thanks.
Yeah. I know. But that is cool. So, it's a moment, again, as you said, the series getting canceled. We're just suddenly, Mayama's mom is a reporter who knows everything. And she
and
tells
has
him...
access to a helicopter and...
She tells him, son, this is the secret of the facility. This is what they take the girls there to do. They take them there so they can cut into their chest and tangibly and remove the tangible organ of love that girls have. They physically removed Tsukiko's love.
For no reason!
Do they have a reason for it?
Yes, it's a power source. They literally... basically say, love is the strongest force in the universe, so we will use it and harness its power.
This is, like, again, I feel like when you hear this, you're going to be like, this series is fucking stupid beyond words. It's generally not. I feel like there's more great things we're forgetting to mention than bad things we're forgetting to mention. But this is a moment where you're like, oh man, this is smolty and stupid as fuck.
So, Haruki and his mom go up in a helicopter, and Haruki, like, you know, gets it on, like, a megaphone in order to address the chief and Tsukiko and everything. And... but, you know, the whole thing is, like, all the girls in the facility have literally had their ability to love removed, which makes them, like, zombies.
Yeah.
They still transform for some reason, which, as we learn, is linked to love. And the second plot twist is revealed, which the chief basically figures out immediately, because Sukiko's been demanding to see Haruki before this, you know, she had seen him. And she was like, well, you know, if you go through with this procedure, sure, I'll let you see him. But once it's removed, she doesn't love him anymore. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that the reason why she's been transforming is because the iron transformation is not actually about puberty. It is developed when the girl who is capable of transforming first falls in love. So the black iron that she grew on her body was her falling in love with the president of the student council, with Nishima. The pink was from her growing feelings for Haruki. And so as her feelings grew, so too did the pink crystals. So, basically, it's magic.
Love is magic.
High as ever, fucking magic.
I mean, I'll give it to the series. At least it actually made, like, love and friendship a tangible element in the series. Like, I'm waiting for the shonen manga where they're like, my friendship level's over 9,000! Like, it's a step away.
Well, that's what happens, though.
That's a step away.
Because she has her capacity to love removed, but Haruki shows up and has this big dramatic thing, and she, like, falls to her knees because she loves him so much that her capacity to love is coming back!
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is he's, like, outside the window, like, banging, he's like, oh, I love you! And she's like, I can't hear you! And he fucking trips and falls, and they're on a big building. She's like, oh my god, he's going to die! I loved him! And all the crystals spread back. She had no fucking... It's like... somehow her liver was removed and she just somehow drank alcohol and was still able to process it. Like, you're just like, I don't know. You didn't just grow a new liver. How did you do this? Like, I love drinking so much.
So they managed to escape from the facility and they're on the run. And somehow they've learned. I forget how. But they've somehow learned
because, and this is a little bit squicky, but
it really is.
They've sort of discovered, I mean, Tsukiko already kind of knows, but it's made more evident after she's with American Psycho, that all of her body, except for her face, transforms, with the sole exception of her vagina, as they call it. So she's like, there's a reason. It's essentially, it's again, the fucking metaphor. It's about real love and, you know, consummating that. Essentially, you fuck them and they stop being magic people.
Right. Because it's about, you know, growing into an adult, and so once you commit an adult act, then they don't transform anymore.
I feel like jumping off the helicopter onto the side of a building is a pretty fucking adult act, but whatever.
So basically, they managed to get away and are hiding out, but they're still, you know, the government's still looking for them. So they decide that the only way to protect Tsukiko is to fuck.
I love it, not because... Actually, it's still sort of sweet, and like I feel like we're shading on it.
There's an expression shot. Let's show their silhouettes bucking against you. No, it's just like they decide to do it, and in this tender moment, they cut away. Then we cut to when the government's found them, and they're just lying next to each other under a blanket.
Yeah. My favorite thing, though, is the government, because it's the doctor. And she's like, no! We have to find them before they finish the act, or she'll be useless! And they open the door, and they're, you know, under a blanket, holding each other. And she's just like, no!
That character is so fucked up. I've only kind of briefly talked about how weird and psycho and perverted she is. But literally, like, she wants to fuck everything. Everything that moves. Like, she uses sex for everything. she tries to extract the secret of who the transforming girl is from Haruki by letting him grope her tits, and basically is like, you know, we can do more stuff if you just tell me who the magical girl is. There are other people in the room, by the way, while she's doing this. None of them are like, you need to be arrested.
This is illegal. We're going to arrest the student counselor for this exact thing.
Exactly. And he wasn't, like, groping the girls while he was doing it. He was literally filming them, but at least he hadn't gotten to the point of actually sexually touching them, which is what you're doing. But it's okay, because you're a girl, I guess! And she's constantly, like, you know, licking her lips at stuff. It's implied that she had some sort of relationship with one of the older transforming girls, then, of course, you removed her capacity to love.
That was a girl who... I think she had feelings for it, but it was certainly started from the girl had a crush on the doctor. And then they took the love gene out of her, the love stone, and she stopped having it, so she just became her servant. But I guess it still fits. It's kind of weird, because the series, like, ultimately, like, we're essentially at the end anyway. The series ends, and basically, because of these events, the government organization's been kind of found out for what they're doing, and it's shut down. All the girls have been returned back to their homes. And there's this weird scene where one of the youngest girls being returned to her mom, and she, like, pulls away from her mom and, like, hugs the doctor. And the doctor is, like, a very sad face. And, like, someone comments, like, we don't even know if it was the right thing to do. And, like, no, I think it is kind of the right thing to do.
You stole them from their homes and removed their ability to love.
Yeah, like...
What's wrong with you?
As stupid as it is, I know this is what Gargamel was essentially trying to do, but still, that's... illegal. If I had a tangible heartstone, if you take it from me without my permission, that's fucked up.
Like, maybe if it were, like, we had to remove their love stone because otherwise they would go on hormonal rampages and use their metallic claws to kill people. Like, if the transforming girls were shown to in any way be dangerous, which they're not. They grow sharp metal plates on their body, but we literally never see them,
it's
like,
pretty
hurt
useless.
Anyone.
Yeah, like, yeah. The most damage that comes from it is fucking, like, getting poked in the closet when they're trying to hide.
You know, sure, they could use them as weapons, but, you know, they're scared teenage girls, you know. So it's like, how the fuck did this even happen? There are a ton of plot holes that pop up at the end, and I wonder how many of them are just because the series got rushed at the end, because it definitely seems like that sequence with the whole facility and stuff was supposed to take place over a much longer period of time. And there are tons of problems that I have with the way that the climax goes down, especially considering that we just have this sudden info dump from Haruki's mom. And ultimately, I think it's not a very satisfying conclusion. I don't like this series, but I definitely agree that there are a lot of good parts about it that I think if everything were at the level of those, I think I would have come away from this actually thinking that it was a good overall series and I would have been surprised at liking it. As is, I'm surprised I didn't dislike it more considering the buildup that it got and also the whole premise of she's, you know, a sexy metal dragon girl on the cover and stuff. But the relationship between Haruki and Sakiko is a pretty good one. It's portrayed pretty damn well, I think, overall. It's just a matter of, like, villains are such weird, freaky perverts that I'm like, God, this is so fucked up. And at least their, you know, lewdness is portrayed as a bad thing. But again, like I said at the beginning of this whole conversation, Haruki's also a pervert.
And
so,
an unrepentant one either, because, you know, again,
right.
The end of the series comes around, he's still flipping up girls' skirts, but supposedly in a relationship with Sukiko. Like, she's like, you! Like, it's just become kind of fun now, I guess.
Yeah, we'll tolerate this because we know you're a good person deep down. It's like, but he's in a relationship with you. Shouldn't he be only flipping your skirt and only when you're in private? Also, you're like...
No, I have to save all these other dragon girls. Shed their armor.
This is the only way to discover which ones need our help.
He's in another universe. He becomes a villain after this. He's like, I must save this dragon girl. She's like, I don't have metamorphosis. Go away. I like this series. It started off almost being like a so bad it's good. Like, it was just so weird and so goofy at the very start of it. But then after like 5 or 6 chapters, like I just started to be like, no, this is just legitimately good. I like a lot of these moments. The characters, by and large, are interesting. I like the comedy in it. It's one of the few series that actually managed to make me laugh with some of its like goofy erotic jokes. Like there's one where they are him and his two pervert friends are watching a porno DVD. And they're like, we have to get past the mosaic, you know, that notion that, you know, like, genitals are kind of blurred out in that area. So they, like, try to go and, like, break into the steam house and, like, into the girl's bath. And they're like, shit, like, we got in there, but steam was covering it this time. And then there's, like, a small end of the chapter, like, gag where they're watching it again. And one of the dudes is like, if you squint really hard, it looks like you can kind of see it. And they're all like, you're a genius!
You know, that... This is actually a surprisingly really funny series at points. I've forgotten a lot of the comedic moments because of how long ago it was. But yeah, in general, Haruki's a pervert jokes are actually really funny. The dynamic he has with his friends can be really amusing. And there's a point that a lot of times his development is shown by the fact that, you know, he's got bigger things on his mind than just looking at boobs. But there's a point where Nanoa... first shows up and she's like, I thought that thing you did was really cool, you know, will you go out with me? And Haruki just goes, you want to have sex? And literally every other character who was present there except Nanoa punches him all at once. It's fucking great.
It's legitimately a funny series of time, and I fully admit, it has a lot of issues to it. There are plot hole issues, and the entire end part is pretty bad. But I honestly feel that we've missed talking about more good things in the series than we have any bad things that are in it. Like, there's a lot of good moments in this series, those are the ones that leave more of the strong impression. Like, that rooftop scene is, like, the big standout scene in my mind from this series. I'm like, that's a great moment. And I had more good impressions reading this series than I did bad ones. The bad scenes are pretty rough, but most of them are pretty funny, too. Like, you could just laugh at them. So, I feel like this is a series I would recommend to anybody who's looking to kind of get into a romantic series, especially because it's so short. This is something you can read relatively quickly.
I read it in like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, it's fun and it's goofy. It's got bad moments to it, and the villains are kind of gross and shit. Mm-hmm. But it's not bad by any stretch, and at times I think it can be really good. The biggest takeaway I'd say from this is if I knew another series that this mangaka did, I would definitely pick that up, because I feel like this guy can be a great writer. And is a great writer in this series. It's just kind of bogged down by a story that kind of, you know, the metaphor drags down on itself a little too much at times.
Right. Let's see here. I know that they've done other stuff because I tried to look up stuff by them. Watanabe Shizumu is the name of the author.
Okay.
And yeah, they have done other stuff. This one is one of their more recent ones. Apparently, oh, that's interesting. Their latest series apparently is called Real Account, and it is a psychological horror series / comedy / adventure. What is it? God damn it! That's like every category it could possibly be.
They're like / slice of life / sports.
Oh no, that definitely looks pretty bloody.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
World driven by fictionalized friendship. Courtesy of the program named Real Account, the table suddenly turns and the cybernetic world turns real. That sounds odd.
Well, the recommendation for people to send it then.
So I guess that's pretty much it for our final thoughts. We have a lot of agreements on this series, but we have different final impressions, basically. Mm-hmm. I come off a little bit more negative than you, so.
But it's fine.
All right. We have been going on for this for quite a while, so we definitely need to bring it into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap.
We'll have to skip over Black Clover, unless one person in the chat room screams out Black Clover really soon.
Yeah.
I guess we'll just go on, Nick.
Actually, I thought it was interesting. Someone in the chat, Renato, brought up, by the way, so did the Transformer girls lose their transformation if you have lesbian sex? It's like, that is a good question, isn't it?
I... guess so.
What is it about, you know, the sex that causes the transformation to stop? Is it just doing something intimate? Is it kissing? Is it... What is it? Because they clearly got naked under that sheet. Eh, whatever. Anyhow, it's recap question week, the mug recap, coming off of that thought. Black Clover, page 56, three-leaf salute. Purple Orca dude got captured because he is the one that betrayed them, apparently. Yeah. They find out that he did actually set up the Midnight Sun because he kidnapped some of the Barry mages. And that is how they managed to infiltrate the Royal Capital, apparently. He was basically seemingly bribed into doing it. Yeah. So they're pretty upset about this. So Wizard King's like, we shall not make this public. Just, you know, make sure none of you have ties to the enemy. No one in your squad should have ties to the enemy. I'm just going to trust you all instead of monitoring your minds to make sure that none of the rest of you are traitors. Because it's definitely only the one guy who's the traitor.
It's an invasion of privacy, Nick. This is where Captain America would come in. He'd be like, this isn't liberty, this is fear. And they'd punch him with a shield. And then he'd be like, do 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 do. And I'd be like, yeah, Captain America, woo! I'm a kid.
Spider-Man's eyes move! I'm like,
woo! So where were we?
The copy magic guy, apparently was in disguise as one of the captains. And it's not revealed which one he was.
I'm assuming it's the kid? Because we can tell a few people it's not. Like, it's not the Mantis guy, Jack the Butcher or whatever, because he's wearing white shoes. We know whoever's doing it's wearing black shoes, presumably not heels, so I don't think it's What's-Her-Game, the Rose Girl. So I'm presuming it's Rill, I think was his name, the other, like, the 19-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Or it could be the sleeping girl, honestly. She didn't do a whole lot, and I can't see what her feet look like. Yeah. But I'm presuming it's not Yami, since he's in a conversation in the next scene.
Right. So, I do like how he, after he, you know, undoes the transformation, he's like, ah, yes, I was transformed. And which one of them was actually me? Who are you talking to? It's just like, you don't know which one was actually me. Anyhow, the Wizard King has kept Yami and Asta to talk with them also. And he's upset about the betrayal, blah, blah, blah. He's like, we must not let the Midnight Sun get these magic stones. The stone marker in their hideout, there were stones set into it. You know, there were magic stones. And blah, blah, blah. You must go on a journey to get all three magic gems in order to get into the Temple of Time, Link. Before I read this chapter, you said, yeah, basically they have to go to the Water Temple. And I was like, no, it's exactly right. Yeah. They have to try and get three magic stones. The first one they're going to is in the Water Temple, literally. So...
But I'm pretty stoked about that, actually. I like water temples. It is weird. I wonder if this is going to be exactly like Magi, though. Because we commented at the time.
Yeah.
Like, remember, like, Magi had that element, like, we had to go into dungeons and get gods from or genies from the bottom of it and, like, get artifacts. And this series had the same thing at one point. Like, they had to go into dungeons and get stuff. But we haven't gone into one of them, so I'm wondering if it's going to be, like, this is similar to that, or if they're just like, that's something we do back there. Remember when Reborn was about motorcycles for fucking, like, a chapter?
Remember when Hunter x Hunter was about auctions?
God, fuck. And they didn't do an auction?
God damn it.
That's coming back. We haven't mentioned it since then, but I suppose we should announce that Hunter x Hunter is coming back to the magazine and will be back in our jump. I am not going to be recapping it, though. Nick didn't even when it was back that time. But I'm
it's going to be great enjoying it for 2 weeks until it goes back on hiatus.
Yeah, I've been burned too many times, so I'm not going to recap it unless... No, I'm just not going to recap it. I'm almost positive it'll go back out after a while. It's a pessimist in me.
So, the Wizard King entrusts... the task of, you know, getting the stone from the Water Temple to the Black Bulls in general. And he's So they're like, yeah, okay. We get a bit of a flashback to when Yami first encountered the Wizard King, because everyone, you know, mistrusted Yami. They thought he looked dangerous, and also, of course, he was a foreigner. He didn't have anyone, you know, with him. And they're all upset. It's like, how the hell did this guy get, you know, get a grimoire? What's with this? And then he ended up having dark magic, which is a really rare type of magic, apparently. And as the Wizard King, you know, saw this and really freaked out over it. Basically, you know, he had an Asta reaction. You know, like, oh, shiny eyes! So he's like, oh, you know, you could become a magic knight! You've got talent! You could do this! So, essentially showing that the Wizard King and Yami go way back. Also, the Wizard King is apparently a bit older than he looks. Because he doesn't, you know, look especially old in the present. You know, he's an adult man, obviously. But he looks like he's probably in his, like, 30s. He looks the exact same as when Yami was apparently a teenager.
Looks like he has a little bit of age lines around his face a little bit.
So, Yami is like, yeah, I'll use my power to help you out, and I'll make sure that you haven't made any mistakes.
He does have time magic, too. They're bringing up a good point. He is a time mage.
Also, apparently, the magic knights have a special salute that they do, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Slap your chest in three salutes. It's one of those things that I'm like, I know all the good salutes are taken. What does this mean? Like, it's like every time the Dudley Boys came out, and they did this, and I was like, has the Dudley Boys one code? Because it actually makes sense once you see it. It's supposed to, like, it's like spells out. I think it's like this, like 3D.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, I get this now.
My favorite wrestling hand sign is Pentagon Juniors, which, because I don't know if you've watched any of Lucha Underground.
I've heard of it.
Okay, he paints his face like a skeleton and wears, like, ninja-themed black and white. He's awesome. He breaks people's arms. But his thing is that he is fearless. He has cero miedo, zero fear, which he does by doing this. So, zero miedo. Miedo. It's so cool, I swear. Yeah.
Alright, fair enough.
Well, it wouldn't be cool if he didn't break people's arms, but yeah. You know what I mean.
I'm like, well, we need to work today. Like, zero miedo! They're like,
also, also, way too many goddamn wrestling groups do the click thing, or parodies of the click thing, yeah. Which is also the same as the baby metal rock fist. Everyone does that. And also, it's the Texas Longhorns thing. How many fucking people are gonna do this hand sign? Just because it's easy to do doesn't mean you can all do it.
Yeah.
You tighten your fist and you do a proper rock fist. You go Spider-Man on that.
Yeah. Or don't steal the Weekly Manga Recap totally unique hand sign, Nick. The Weekly Manga Recapper. Yeah. Looks kind of
like... never gonna use that.
This looks kind of like a W... But, like, if you break the two fingers, the V splits and it's a W, and there's no time for the M. Well, you turn a W upside down, it's an M.
Look, we would do it like this, but not everyone can separate their fingers like that.
I can do it. It's not easy on the left hand, all right?
And then you could do W, M, and then you'd have to, like, twist your fingers really awkwardly to make the R, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Yami and Asta are gonna go and do the mission, whatever. Gaush catches up with the nun. Little moment where, because they're like, you know, insulting each other back and forth, as per usual. But he does mention after all that, he's like, you know, thanks for looking out for me. Also, I'm glad you survived. So she's like, okay. Asta shows up there. And Marie is like, oh, it's Asta, yay! And Gaius gets pissed off. He's like, I'm going to kill that guy if you're so happy to see him. And then nothing important happens at the end, Chris.
There's a minor character who shows up, like one of those kind of like NPC moments at the end. I'm pretty sure she's just there to start his next quest line. Because I don't know if you guys, her name's Rebecca, but Rebecca's never going to be an important character. So even though she kisses him, I don't think we're going to see her again.
It's like, if you gather up, you know, 10 cuckoos for me, then I will give you 50 rupees as a prize, and also a little kiss on the cheek.
Yeah, she's like, I'll give you that heart piece that you need, not the full one. I'm like, this is worthless right now.
Noelle, has still been hanging out at this place the entire time, apparently, not doing anything. And Noah, of course, goes all Cinderay on him, and he's like, "Oh, you got all beat up again. You're completely hopeless when I'm not there to help you out." And he's like, "Well, I get beat up when you're there too, Noelle. Shut up!" You know. And Rebecca has this little moment of thought where she's like, "You know, I can't compete with a girl who can actually fight alongside him." So that's what, you know, makes her decide to take some action and kiss him on the cheek. And of course,
which I feel is an insignificant act. Like, this is a character who's one and done.
It's not, well, I mean, it's not as if she like picks him up by the head, face and tongued, you know, hockeys with him. You know, he gets embarrassed about this. Noelle gets really upset. And Marie weirdly goes, "I'm going to kiss Asta too." And Gosh is like, "Your head is mine, Asta." Odd scene. I don't know. Whatever. That's the chapter. They're going to the water temple.
Yes.
Whatever.
I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see a water temple. I like water-themed areas, so it should be kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
Anywho, let's move on to a weird chapter. Bleach. Chapter 668?
Yep.
Which, last time, Zaraki clashed swords with Gerard. And as a result of that, he somehow suddenly got this cut on his torso. And Gerard explains, "Oh, my power is a miracle! This body can't be destroyed and is enlarged by the people's fears. And Hoffnung is a sword of the people's hopes bundled together. When it breaks, there will be despair!" And this guy's like, "I don't get what he's talking about." But basically, what Gerard says is, "Every single time that we clash swords, that means my sword will be chipped a little bit." Which is weird, because that's not something that, like, has ever really been brought up in Bleach. Like, swords do get damaged occasionally, and they always make a big deal of, like, "Oh, the Zanpakuto got damaged." But it's never like, "Oh, yeah, every single time that swords clash, they, you know, get a little bit damaged."
It's not like sparks when you punch a Power Ranger. Like, every time you do it, it's like, yeah, those sparks come out.
Right. Well, but that is how real swords do work. You know, you swing heavy pieces of metal together, both of them are going to be damaged. That's just never been how swords work in Bleach, though, because they have, like, you know, super magic sword powers where they don't get damaged that way. So, it's weird that comes up now. Yeah, every time that they clash swords, it's going to be chipped a little bit, damage is going to be dealt to the person who dealt damage to it. But Zaraki's just like, "Well, then that means I just got to kill you without breaking the sword."
He's not logic.
They, you know, trash talk each other for a little bit. We get the chapter title, which is "Bigger, Faster, Stronger," which is basically almost the exact same as last week. I know one of the words is different, but I can't remember which. Zaraki, of course, has, you know, released his Shikai, and he goes after Gerard. It's a weird moment where Gerard actually, like, does this to dodge the sword. I thought that, the first time I read through this, I thought that, Zaraki was actually going to make note of the fact that Gerard bothered to dodge the attack. It's like, well, why?
Who cares? Like, it's not going to kill him, it's just going to make him stronger.
Right. But he actually instinctively dodged it. The only thing that Zaraki notes is, "Oh, you're pretty fast. You know, you dodged that. You're faster than you look." And I thought, it was like, "Oh, is he going to be smart and realize that, oh, you know, if I deal you damage, you're actually scared of it?" Because Zaraki has good combat intelligence sometimes. Uh-huh. But no, he's just like, "You're fast, and so are you." Hits the guy who tries to interfere in the fight, but Zaraki actually attacks him. And he's like, "This is my fight, bitch! You guys get out of here!"
I'm like, "You stole it from us! You're a rude little piggy!"
So Byakuya is like, "Well, don't bother, you know, we can't actually try and work with him. He can't be reasoned with."
Oh, wow. I totally misread his line there. I thought it said, "Don't bother, Zaraki can't be reasoned with ether." And I was like, that's kind of dark. You're like, I try to knock him out and do things to him all the time. That fucker just won't go down.
So, Pizzica knows, though, Zaraki's already removed his eye patch. He knows that he has to go completely all out in order to fight this guy. He knows that he's going to be in trouble. And meanwhile, Byakuya is absurd. I don't understand why.
This dude's power is not nearly as strong as the ability to imagine things into reality.
Hitsugaya, his icicle petals are starting to disintegrate, or a lot of them disintegrate. He's apparently, like, more than halfway through it, if I'm getting that right. And so Byakuya is like, oh, we're all exhausted. You know, we've all been through a bunch of fighting by this point. Whatever. Hitsugaya has been brought back from the dead. It's understandable if he needs to take a bit more of a lie down. So they plan to basically just make it, to just, you know, make their own attack on Gerard without Zaraki's cooperation. Zaraki is still getting beaten up because it's inevitable that he's clashing swords with Gerard, considering that Gerard's sword is the size of a fucking building. Byakuya launches his attack. It's a guy who tries to launch his attack, and Gerard's like, you tried to catch me off guard, but I've somehow been keeping an eye on all of you, so fuck it, I'm gonna collapse the buildings that you're hiding in. Brah! My brain is also huge! Zaraki is lying face down eventually at some point with the crap being out of him. All of a sudden, Yachiru appears before him. And this is the weird thing in the chapter. Yachiru appears before him, and Zaraki's like, hey, get up, you know, Kenshan, we gotta keep on fighting. And Zaraki's like, where the fuck have you been? And Yachiru says, if you use me properly, there's nobody that you can't cut. He takes his hand, and energy is, like, flowing between them. And, you know, he holds up his hand, he's like, what did you just do? You know, this power. And Yachiru says, what, don't you know anything? This power is Bankai. So,
Zaraki's Bankai.
Right. So, yes, Zaraki is presumably going to win the fight with his Bankai. So, a long-ass time ago, because they made a big deal that Zaraki, you know, has this, you know, sword that, you know, he doesn't have the Shikai or anything like that. So people theorized maybe Yachiru is his actual Zanpakuto. This would have been a long ass time ago, like 10 years or something ago, that people would have probably first thought of this theory. It's something that I have, like, the first group of people that I talked with Bleach about, this was something that, you know, we brought up between each other. It was like, in addition to, hey, there's this moment in the fight between, you know, Shunsui and Ukitake and Yamamoto where Nanao reaches into her Soul Reaper uniform. Was she, like, going to take out her Zanpakuto at that point? Because we've never seen her Zanpakuto. Of course, it eventually it's later on, revealed later on. No, she didn't have her Zanpakuto at that point. But, you know, it's those little things that we would seize upon. And so, but this has been a popular theory for a really long time, that Yachiru is actually linked to Zaraki's powers because, you know, he discovers her in the wilderness. She's unusually super powerful, despite looking like a little kid. And then, of course, recently, when Zaraki first revealed his Shikai, suddenly Yachiru disappeared after the fight with Gremmy. And now it looks like she is very closely related to his powers. Is she a representation of his Zanpakuto spirit that has somehow been materialized this whole time? I don't know. And also, if that is the case, I'm not sure how I feel about it at this point. It is possible that, you know, because one of the things needed in order to unleash Bankai is for the spirit of the sword to be materialized. That's been established, because Renji could do it, Ichigo had to do it in order to unlock his Bankai and stuff like that. So maybe this is something that he's just unconsciously doing, and he's unconsciously causing the spirit to take this form, and it's not actually Yachiru. If it is actually Yachiru, and it has been Yachiru the whole time, I do have to wonder how a Zanpakuto spirit can have its own Zanpakuto.
And has a Shikai.
Right. And can operate completely separate from Zaraki if he's off doing training way far away.
She wasn't in that fight with Unohana, right? Where he finally, like, released.
Yeah, she wasn't present at all. She was also, you know, doing stuff separate from when he showed up.
Yeah, and remember that important fight with Unohana, where she died.
and never came back. So, I don't know. I guess it's possible. But if it does turn out to be the case, I think that I would look back on some previous scenes and be like, well, how the fuck is this possible, then? And if this is going to be the case, then I want an explanation, and I want a good one in the next chapter. But anyway, that's Bleach. It's not really a very notable chapter, except for this last bit where there is a moment of intrigue, and it's like, okay, I have to find out more about this before I pass my judgment on it.
Very true. All right, let's move along to Fairy Tale, chapter 480, Grave Markers of the North. So we open up with Brandish, who has been put back in her jail cell, and everyone is like, yeah, you don't have to go back to your jail cell, and she's like, well, I never expected you to defeat Jacob. I now realize what the Emperor meant when he told us not to underestimate you, but you won't hold out much longer. The eighth month is coming, and everyone's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, no, in our country, there is a month of natural disasters, and it is called August. August is the month of fear, and everybody knows it. It's in our legends. And August, some of you might remember, is the name of the highest powered character in the entire evil... what's that their name? Akastasia? The evil army. The highest general in the evil army of the Spriggan 12. He's the strongest. So, he's coming. And we got back, and there's some jokes. Makarov apologizing for breaking a hole down there. And basically, we see the first guildmaster going down the staircase with Kana, and she's shows her, you know, her body sealed in that crystal, and she's like, I need you to free my body from here. You need to get me out of that crystal. Well, how do I do that? You need to kill me, basically. She's like, you need to use fairy glitter.
Take this knife.
Yeah, just right across the throat. Don't worry, no one will ever be able to figure out it was you. No, she's like, you have to kill me, and that will break the crystal. And Kana's like, I can't do that. And she's like, you're dumb as shit. Listen to me. This is a fucking illusion. This means nothing to me. Kill this. Break it. Oh, it's a kitty. And get me out of here. And that's where we cut. We cut over to the north, where several members of Fairy Tales Guild are heading up to meet the army. They're supposed to gang together with Sabretooth and Blue Pegasus. So we see Gajeel... God, I always forget this character's name. The one he's dating.
Levy.
Is it Levy? Yeah, Levy. Elfman, Mira Jane, Mira Jane's Sana. Sister, and Lily Panther.
Have a name! I just never do anything!
Yeah, I know, and you're dressed up like a fucking snow bunny, which is just all kinds of great. But they're you know, like, hey, there's a whole group coming. Get ready. And then they see this big wave approaching, and they're all carrying, like, crosses. And in a full-page spread... you see essentially every significant character of those guilds tied and wounded on these crosses, some in chains, some have like arrows still sticking out of them, but they're completely defeated and being paraded about in this army. Like, it's not just that they defeated all of them, it's that they defeated them and are now using them as mockery as they approach what Fairy Tale's army of like four people. You know, because Lasana doesn't count. It's a cool scene. I like it. I think it's actually intimidating. The cynic in me is like, all of them are faking. Because villains never get away with something like this in Fairy Tale. Like, they're all going to wake up and be like, we were just making you think you had beaten us. And now we're going to beat you all up. Boom, bang. But it's a cool moment where, like, everyone's really pissed off. You're like, oh, this isn't... I can see... This is one of those moments where I completely get behind Fairy Tail being super pissed because this is fucked up. I mean, it's not like you fucked a bunch of virgins and cut out the bed sheets to tape in a photo album like some other series, but it's still pretty screwed up. And we then cut away again because we can only stay here for so long. We cut back into Southern Fjord, which is where Wall's fight was and all that. Basically... two of the three Spriggan 12 members from over there have been taken down between DeMaria and Wall. But there's one still left. So we see the group of Leon, Gray, Luvia, the other member of that fucking group whose name I don't remember, all getting together on the ship where we know the last member is because we saw him. He, like, hid in the shadows on the ship. And everything suddenly goes dark. And they're like, wait, I know this magic. And that's when Urza sees, like, oh, that's Shimon. Or I guess they just call him Simon. Simon! The guy who died back at the Tower of Paradise arc, you know, where I had my whole I had my whole flashback about seeing my own funeral and how people were giving me, like, you know, well wishes and sadness over my death, and then Simon gave his life for me and no one really gave a fuck. That guy's back! But not. He's just kind of an illusion, essentially. It's not exactly explained, but Gajeel's like, no, don't, it's, you know, he isn't Simon, essentially. And that's when we turn up and we see the real person here, Nineheart of the Spriggan 12, who says, this is Historia for you three. Love and friendship and family and death. Ah, yes, what a beautiful Historia it is. He's got a big fucking rose all over his chest, so I figure that's an appropriate voice.
That is... This is a weird power. And it's like, I showed you an illusion of someone from your past. It's like, okay...
I think
going to work?
I guess why you could bring back the dead and it's that makes them evil or something. Because the next chapter is called The Historia of the Dead. So I guess he brings back their history and makes it fight them. In my mind, though, I'm like, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure does this power so much cooler. So it doesn't matter. But hey, I still like this chapter.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Hiro read that war in Naruto and was like, wait, you mean they're just, you know, the zombies are defeated if you're super happy friends with them? This is exactly what I need.
He's like, holy shit, this is right. Like, he then reads Iron Man. He's like, oh my god, I can make friendship a tangible power up! It's an okay chapter, though. But anyway, we'll move on to Food Wars.
Food War, Shokugeki no Soma, chapter 161. Fuck, what is this thing called again?
Dueling Performance.
There it is. So, we get this brief montage that explains, remember all those research societies that didn't win their Shokugeki? Yeah, Azabi went about making sure they were dismantled. And he even says, the literal dismantling, as he's in a hard hat commanding a fucking wrecking ball forward to destroy the building. It's like, you can use those for other stuff, man!
It's somewhat amusing, too, that they have him in a goofy outfit, but he still has, like, his eyes rolled up into the back of his head, like, the pure incarnation of evil, but he's, like, in a fucking tracksuit and a stupid, like, mining helmet.
Which he wears over his regular black suit with ties, too. We even cut to inside one of the societies, and they're like, you were officially dissolved. And it's like, oh, it's like, you can't continue in this. Apparently they continue to try to meet in secret, and they've been found out. So he's made an example of by being stripped down to his underwear and trussed up on... Basically, this is our second chapter this week, where a guy was crucified.
Naked crucifixion.
But he is tied to the top of a post and left for everyone to gaze at. Okay. I can understand forcibly removing research societies. I think that that is within the rights of the administrator of a school. Physically trussing up and stripping a student, you're gonna get sued. You'll get sued and fired so goddamn fast. I don't care how rich you are, that ain't gonna fly.
That's when they take this to, like, the, whatever, like, Japan's, like, the Board of Ethics are, and they're like, you have to do something about this. They're like, absolutely. After I just take a bite out of this quiche that a zombie made, what do you mean he did something wrong? I don't see anything wrong. You're fat. Get those big fat titties out of here. Get me out of that quiche. Get in my office. I'm enjoying myself with this quiche. You look like you're about to masturbate. I'm about to do a lot of things with this quiche.
It just keeps on getting worse and worse. He was like, ah, yes, I see that you have photographic evidence that Izami has murdered a puppy and is sleeping with several students. Well, hang on a second, Mr. Nakiri. Let me just try some of your quiche. Case dismissed!
Like, it's even, like, it gets, like, lamer and lamer food. He's like, let me try some of these, oatmeal raisin cupcakes. Alright, let's get... Oh, it's so good!
So surprisingly good!
This is great! I mean, for oatmeal raisin cupcakes, definitely.
Soma contemplates the fact that lessons have changed in the school, and he talks about how there used to be two different kinds of cooking practices here. There would be, you know, you would have to follow a specific recipe and recreate it in a lot of time. The second was you would just be given a style that you would have to prepare for, or, you know, have to use a certain ingredient, and that's been completely taken out. You know, creativity has been abolished, basically. She, you know, Mia apparently has also been hearing about the about this, I think.
He pops it a couple times. Well, no, someone makes a joke about it. He's like, man, I had more leeway working in Shinomiya's kitchen. And he's like, I feel like someone just insulted me. Like that whole, when someone's talking to you behind your back, you can feel it.
He also shows up in, like, the cover panel, weirdly enough.
Yeah, and it may have just been bouncing around, though.
Yeah. One of the Secret Service-looking guys that serves as Zami shows up, and he says, your regular teacher has declared he will no longer accept sexual policies, and so he's been relieved of his duties. As such, your class today will be overseen by an interim instructor, and it's the fucking first seat, Eishi Tsukasa. And it was like, oh my god. And Tsukasa does the Johnny Cash thing where everyone knows who he is, but he introduces himself anyway. He's like, hi, I don't know if you guys know who I am. I'm Eishi Tsukasa. I'm the first seat of every such. And we're just like, we know. Hey, everybody, I'm Johnny Cash.
You're almost literally Jesus to us, all right? We all know who you are.
So everyone's like, oh my god, it's Tsukasa is teaching us. And so he says, so can one of you, like, volunteer to be the sous chef so that, you know, you can help me out for this? Does anyone want to be my assistant? And I was like, I would just get in the way. I can't possibly do this. You know, there's no idea. Everyone's like, does no one, you know, want to cook with me? He's like, well, no, it's not that. And someone just appeared next to him. Didn't even, like, walk up. He's just, like, there, standing next to him. Oh, okay, you want to be my assistant? And so Soma does a good job. He completely keeps up with Tsukasa. He understands all of his instructions clearly. He even anticipates what he's going to instruct him to do next, and he completely keeps pace with him. And basically, his practice with Shinomiya is paying off as he flashes back to it. And everyone is completely in awe over this. The lesson finishes up, and Tsukasa's like, you're far more skilled than I expected. Thanks. Tsukasa and Soma have this kind of, sort of moment almost of connection, as, there's a little bit more of a, we've cooked together, so, we can have a little bit of a conversation. And so Tsukasa, says he's really, exhausted. And he explains that he was really nervous with everyone watching him. And Soma's like, well, why are you so nervous? Oh, I just thought of what would happen if I made a mistake. I guess if Rindo was here and saw me whining like this, you'd probably get mad at me again. It's completely Rindo's bitch, basically. And then Soma, taking this, he's like, wait a minute, I just helped out one of Central's classes! What am I doing?
Oh, I'm an idiot!
So Tsukasa, is like, you're really skilled. You do great work. You could be, useful. Why don't you, you could become my right-hand man. Why don't you, try joining Central? And so it's just like, are you serious? As the chapter ends. I am guessing that Tsukasa had probably paid no attention to Soma's speech about wanting to stop Central.
He's like, I don't watch the news. Nor anything. I just cook all day long.
Does nothing but cooking.
Who's our prime minister?
Nice little chapter. I like the, gaining of a connection between Soma and basically the most dangerous student in her Central's wing. I like seeing that they basically get along as opposed to having a more antagonistic relationship like he did with Aizon.
It's not, I'm curious to see more and more of this guy's thought process, because there's definitely a more interesting character beneath right. what his surface suggests. Like, there's more to him than just being this klutzy guy who's just really skilled. There's a reason why he's number one. There's a reason why he sided with Azami. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll get some insight into that second one. Yeah. All right. It's time, Chris.
All right. I posted up a poll earlier this week on the Twitter where I said that we were going to do a special recap for one of the series this week. This is all part of the theme of doing kind of like a very comedy-centric month for this month. And I thought, what better way to do it than to bring back something that was well-beloved and also fulfill a promise that I made a long time ago. So My Hero Academia won the poll, so it's getting a special recap this week. And the thing I'm bringing, basically what we're going to be doing is we're going to be voice acting this chapter, similar to Weekly Manga Recap Lives in a way, but with two twists. One is I'm going to be bringing back music, kind of like how we did the Gakkyo Hotai. But the second thing is I have the random celebrity voice generator. So as we're going to be going through this, we won't know what voices we're going to be doing to the character until I click it and find out which one we're going to be doing. And right. this is a mixture of, like, old classic voices, a mixture of, like, common impersonations, and just some oddball ones in here. So this is going to be an odd experiment, but it hopefully will be good.
So how do you want to decide who does the voices? Do you want to suggest, like,
I mean, I feel go like back it's, and forth? I feel like it's going to be a little of that, but it's also going to be like, if because there's some in here that I know you can do, and there's right, that so I can't,
So if a voice comes up that one of us can do, then we'll just do that character. Yeah.
But we'll, just take initiative maybe. On it.
Okay. All right. So the first one we got to do is Izuku.
Alright, so the first
it's got to be important, because he is the main character.
Well, this works!
Oh, wait. It's chapter is number 85, Nothing But Fools.
So, our first voice, Nick, is Maximilian Pegasus.
God damn
it. All right. And then, Deku's mom, I got that voice, so that'll be a surprise when that one comes up. All right.
Mom? Yeah, I'm getting discharged, but there's something I gotta do. I'll be home tomorrow or the next. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right, I can move now, but I still feel a little sluggish. The doctor says I receive some extra strength healing. UA likes to keep its students close at hand, and I hear there's a media frenzy back at the school.
Ellipses? Izuku, do you really have to go back to UA?
See. Students gathered outside high school. Thank God that's only her only lines. Students gathered outside the school. Ida's voice.
Alright. Random generator, don't fail us now. Ooh, William Shatner, Nick.
I shouldn't have gotten violent with you. I apologize.
This is somewhat different.
Yeah, you're Ozu.
Rozu. Alright, celebrity impersonator. Edamon!
What, sir, seriously?
Your reason for accompanying us isn't very convincing, huh?
I'm fine, don't sweat it. It's precisely because I can't agree with you that you're all doing that I'm choosing to accompany you. If I think for even a second that it's going to evolve or devolve into a fight, I'll pull us out of there in a hurry. Think of me as Auditor, Watchman.
Todoroki, and actually, it's Kirishima first.
Is it Kirishima?
Yeah, he's got that little line.
Oh, okay, well, we got
I gotta zoom in. I gotta zoom in on that one. What the fuck is he saying? Oh! Ah, it's a comic book reference. That's funny.
It's Watchmen. Or not Watchmen. Sorry, it's Adam West is the voice.
Isn't it Watchmen?
Alright.
And Todoroki.
Well, I feel bad because you're the only one who did this. And Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Watchmanita! God, this is a terrible voice for Todoroki.
Well, the same goes for me. This is a job for the pros. Watching from the sidelines without interfering is what we should be doing. I'm Watchman Yairozu. but I understand how you all feel, so it's a good compromise, don't you forget it. A nonviolent rescue isn't very realistic. They don't seem to realize they're hardly used to acting calmly. Once we arrive and assess the situation, they'll see how hard this will be, how undigitalistic. At least they hope they will.
Oh, God.
I don't even know who's talking here. I think it's...
I think that this is... I think it... Let's see. I'm not sure either. It might be Yairozu. It might be Todoroki. I don't know.
Don't say it's Yairozu. Well, all right, then. The coordinates on the tracker point to Yokohama City in Kagan Digiworld. Specifically, Kamino Ward.
It should be a 2-hour trip from here in Nagano, so we'll arrive around 10 p.m.
I'll take Adam West from you.
No, I want to do Adam West. I love that.
Sorry.
I wanted to hear yours, though. You can do it for a little bit.
Right. I'll do it for this line. You can just be like, I'm taking this back.
Did anyone tell the others the details of this mission?
Yeah, and then they wasted time trying to stop us.
Uraraka was really harsh about it, just to drive the point home.
What the fuck was that?
It's a very wacky Adam West. damn it.
Gotta do Uraraka.
Uraraka really? Is Macho Man. So sorry, Nick. They're not so...
It's only one line. I can do it. Hang on.
I'm sure Bakugo will consider it disgraceful to get rescued.
I couldn't really get my rhythm going on that one. Oh well.
That worked.
Now it's Bakugo.
Okay. Let's see here. Oh, okay.
Stay back, Decker.
Let me say this much. We're about to do is a selfish thing that won't be accepted by anyone, even Bakugo. If you want to turn back, there's still time.
I wouldn't be here if I wasn't completely sure about that. Plus, he's not the kind of dude to let any villain boss him around.
This is an All Might line.
Oh, do we need a new voice for All Might? Okay.
Yes.
He is... I'll take this one. Yeah, going above and... Oh, shout it. Going above and beyond is what makes one a real hero. I had to get the chowder line in there to remember how John F. Kennedy talks.
Ah, thought all might.
I was given all of this by All Might. He saw potential in me, so there's no turning back now.
Alright, I think I know who's saying this.
We're here. It's Kamino Ward. Guess those jerks are hiding out somewhere around here.
Sure is crowded!
So where to, Yairozu?
Oh, please, wait a moment. Oh, from now on, we must exercise extreme digivigilance. The villains, they know our faces,
Right, gotta be all covert.
Fuck, what was he doing again?
That's what the random generator is for, Nick. He gets a new voice. Alright, well, he can't also be Edamon. Here we go.
Got like 17 voices to do already.
We kind of very well scouted the neighborhood like that, though. We're on another note. I have a suggestion. Blush. Shuffle, shuffle.
Oi! You talking to me?
Like, how do you make him sound tough with the Maximilian Pegasus?
You don't! Disguises! I see.
What? Bam!
I like how Adam West is the tough guy by default, too.
no good, chum. You gotta jut that shit out more. Oi!
Well, on the tiny night, a bunch of children skulking around would be too suspicious. There's an editor game with the eager big boobs, eh?
You looking at me? Yeah, Yorozu. Wouldn't this stuff have been free if you'd made it with your creation quirk?
That would be against the rules! If I used my quirk or widget, did you knit it silly? Well, I could add them the circulation of goods would... Oh, right, one system shouldn't have the power to affect the economy.
Little Miss Moneybags just wanted to experience the donkey store, I bet.
Oh, this is a new guy.
Let's just do one voice for random bystanders, because I'm not going to... We can't change voices for every single one of them. All we're going to run out.
Oh,
oi!
Okay, now it's someone... I guess this is someone in the conference.
I think maybe... The announcer? It's not an announcer. I guess it's just a news newscast. Reporter. So it's just a news reporter, so it's probably one online. So,
we will now air a segment of UA's High School Apologies Press Conference, which took place earlier tonight.
I think this is...
This is the principal.
I think so.
Alright, so let's see what we got for the principal. Add him on again, no.
Oh, this is my favorite one. I'm so glad this came up. Nick, our principal is Benzai.
We can trade this one off because you can't do a bad Benzai impression.
I'm so glad this one came up.
All right, I'll start us off.
I regret doing that, though. Preparedness was responsible for the holy cage of 27 of our first-year students. Ours is an institution for heroes in training. We are nonetheless negligent in our defense...
This is getting, like, more and more Sylvester Stallone as I do this.
And we understand that this has made many of you uneasy. We apologize for this deeply and sincerely. There is absolutely no excuse for what's occurred. Even our media-hating Aizawa sensei is...
Oh, a question! Or do you want a generated voice for this?
I think that this will be a new one, because this is a fairly long line.
Oh, okay, alright. New voice is... Ooh, Vince McMahon!
God damn it! Question from NHA! This makes the fourth time this year that UA students have been confronted by villains! Because of this shortcoming, you're in charge of Raw now! And now you're fired! Given that some were actually injured this time, what explanation have you given to their understandably concerned families? Furthermore, please tell us in concrete terms what measures you've taken to prevent these sorts of incidents! Yeah.
No, don't worry, Nick, you just have to be Pegasus.
They should already know UA's stance, given that we went ahead with the sports festival. But going this far with the questioning is... treating them like the bad guys.
Oi, we've increased surveillance of the surrounding areas and revamped our school security system. Oh, and this taco bell is bursting my stomach. Oh, but we explained to the parents that our strong stance against villainy will guarantee the student's safety. Now, do you want to watch me play this game where you have sex with underage girls? It's illegal in most countries.
And if you have a problem with this as a member of the media, well, good luck catching
me,
fatty.
Go fuck yourself.
Can't catch me, fatty.
It's still funny after 7 goddamn years.
You'll never not be funny. Alright,
Random bystander.
Huh? Not a good that did. What are these fools even saying?
What matter are results. The mood has started going south.
Thank God, the main character was a voice I can easily do. Alright, we gotta do Shigaraki's voice. He's got a lot of lines.
Alright. Donald Trump, Nick.
Fuck!
You did a good Donald Trump, though. I feel bad. There's ones in here that I know are, like, right in my wheelhouse. They're just not popping up.
Pretty weird, if you ask me.
That was good. You're on the right track.
Why are they criticizing the heroes? Their only crime was doing too little too late. We gotta put them in concentration camps. You just got to. It's their job to protect people. But anyone could screw up now and then, right? I mean, I wouldn't screw up. I mean, I'm amazing. You know, I would never screw up. And if anyone under my arsenal screwed up, I would fire them. Unless they, you know, tried to assault a reporter, in which case I would not fire them. I would defend them in court and say that they were never going to be fired. Anyhow, why are people expecting them to be perfect? Heroes today sure have it rough, I'd say. I mean, they gotta go all by all these different rules. Villains have no rules. We have to go after their families. Am I right, Bakugo?
Oh, man. Alright, we need Lizard Guy's voice.
Spinner.
This is a weird one.
Ooh-ah! The minute the protecting people started coming with a paycheck, heroes stopped being heroes. This is what Stain has taught us. Ooh-ah!
I'm not placing that.
It's my mild Al Pacino. My tepid Al Pacino.
You save someone and you get money. You get fame. Sounds weird to me. And in this society where the precious rules are everything, the people aren't cheering for the losers, which why you gotta vote for me? I'm not a loser, I'm a winner. Tell them to fight another day, they blame them. Our war is based on a few simple questions. What is a hero? What is justice? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but you gotta punish the woman, I say. You just got to. There's gotta be some punishment. Is this what society is really supposed to be like? Once we get people thinking about this stuff, that's when we've won. And I know you love to win. So vote Trump.
I love you.
I mean Tamura.
I love that you've added so much more improv to the lines.
Well, that's how I do my Trump, is I say absurd shit he said. Anyhow, Dobby, untie him. Alright, what's Dobby's voice? Now keep in mind, when we did Dobby, it was just serious and threatening. So what's he gonna be for this chapter?
Huh? He'll go wild for sure.
You're doing like, is this
no, it's Snagglepuss.
Oh, okay, I haven't got enough of it yet. All right. It's okay. We gotta treat him as an equal. Unlike the Muslims, we're scouting him after all. Besides, before he starts throwing a tantrum, our little UA student here should be smart enough to know he can't win.
Twice! Do it!
Okay, twice is one line.
you just want me to do the Bane?
Whatever, he's got one line, dude. Do whatever.
Yeah, me? No fights!
Alright, now, Mr. Compress has a fairly long speech here. So, I think this is the last part we've got.
So much Edamon.
Well, it's alright, don't do Edamon, but, I mean, after this, it's all Bakugo lines once he's finished. So, right. If it's another part for me, don't worry about it.
It might be, I don't know if you have a good one or not, Nicolas Cage. We could switch on off, you know.
We can try doing it between werewolves or something. We apologize for the rather forceful measures taken to get you here, and yet...
But we need you to understand that we're no mere thugs working in the name of some aimless evil. On the least, it wasn't an accident that we scared you away.
Everyone here has a different story to tell, but we've all suffered thanks to other people. How did I get fired? Thanks to rules, thanks to heroes, we felt suffocated. And you, more than anyone, kaboom!
Oh, yeah, I have a music cue for this.
Hey, you thought I was going to croak of old age while you were in its yep duet.
A lot of people didn't think that you might do that in the last Rocky film, so.
I can't stand Moras like you. Don't get to the damn point!
Shigaraki!
Basically, you say you were gonna cause trouble and be a pal, What a joke!
Oh wait, no, this is an announcer.
No, this is Kid Bakugo.
Oh, okay.
George! Punch! Then finish! See? I've always admired all my strengths, and no matter what any of you jerks say, nothing's ever gonna change that.
Ellipses! Father!
To be
who I got a small $1 million loan from. Alright. That's it. By the way, this was a really good chapter.
Yes. I like this chapter immensely.
A little bit of kind of needed levity to the serious situation with the joking around by the students. I love how Yayorozu's idea to make them inconspicuous is to dress them up in absurdly weird disguises, which make them look like they belong in a bar. Mm. Oh, I will say, I think the Todoroki's hairstyle actually looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I wish he kind of switched over to that. It's kind of neat.
I like how freaking Kirishima just got giant fucking horn ornaments in his hair.
And somehow, like, Ida has mustaches and shit.
Yeah, he looks like... Yeah, he and Todoroki, like, look like bartenders, almost. Although Ida looks a little bit like a Chippendale.
Yeah.
And Yayorozu's just got this fancy dress, which apparently shows off her boobs.
Yeah, I was like, is this a thing that... I can't remember, is this something that Ida had before where he uses pig Latin when there's hot chicks around?
I think that's new, but, you know, he's the very straight-laced one, so it makes sense for him to be the most nervous about it. But it's like, I look at it, I was like, it's not like it's particularly accentuating them. I mean, obviously it's not, you know, the same as when she wears just, you know, a very conservative t-shirt or something like that. But her regular, you know, superhero costume exposes a lot of cleavage so that she can use her powers better by using more exposed skin. This is not as bad as that. It's not like she's wearing, like, some super bust-accentuating tight dress. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We only see her for a few frames. Maybe it looks more weird in other panels. So, but getting that, putting that aside, though, I really like the conversation that Shigaraki has where it's like he's completely, you know, bullshitting, basically. Just like, oh, yeah, we've all been held down by society. And so Bakugo's just like, what the fuck ever? Yeah. You guys just want to cause destruction. This is a complete joke. And anyway, I've always loved All Might. I idolize him as a hero. You're not going to turn me just with a few simple words.
I liked it a lot. I like Bakugo coming out of it and still being like, no, I like hero. I like All Might. I admire All Might's triumphs. Like, I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting this is actually being into something pretty severe, because if Bakugo is going to change, it's going to require something bad happening to All Might, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So we could be up for something cool.
Well, you know that All Might is on the way, so, I mean, this is probably not going to be the end of Bakugo's character focus in all of this.
Yeah. Now, that was also the end of our special recap. We are going to do one of these each week throughout the month of October. Or
so now you know what those straw polls are going to be.
Yes. But it won't come up until Monday, and it's also, I'm going to be taking creative liberties with removing options. So this one, I left it kind of as is, but if there's a chapter next week that has, like, no real pace to it and has a shit ton of voices, we're not doing it. Also, I'm taking My Hero out already since we just did it. So, don't be shocked when that happens.
Okay. That's a nice suggestion. Include Jesse Eisenberg's Lex
Luthor. That's actually the other thing. If you have suggestions for impressions you want on there, shoot them over to me and I can add them into this generator so we can keep adding and building onto it.
Alright. Now, let's move on. Note about Nisekoi. She has decided to get out of the way. Chidori has decided to get out of the way because she also stumbled across Raku confiding about his crush on Onodera. So she's like, I'm going to get out of the way because they love each other. But there's a misunderstanding, like all romantic comedies have. That's all I really want to say.
Well, I've heard some people actually think this might be possibly even a time skip, because he makes like a note like that's the last time Chidori was ever at school.
Right.
So it's possible.
Sorry. I don't know.
I'm hoping it's a step forward instead of a step back, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, Nisekoi is very obviously heading towards his conclusion. It's coming up relatively soon. I mean, I can't imagine that the series is going to carry forward for longer than, like, a couple more months, honestly. Unless this launches into our big finale arc. Like, there can't be much more to the series because of all of the stuff that's been wrapped up already. Like, all of the little...
All the other side girls, yeah.
It's basically just the main plot thread left to do. Okay, so, One Piece!
We had to start blasting through One Piece.
Awesome two-page spread, you know, it's old Japanese awesome. Art style. I love Luffy's portrayal with, you know, his Gear 4, with, you know, he's portrayed like, you know, like a demon, almost. Mm-hmm. But really cool looking, and I like how, even like the way the eyes look. You know, it's drawn very old, traditional Japanese art style. There's a particular name for it, which I'm forgetting at the moment, but oh well. The island of Zoe is under attack. The elephant is being attacked by Jack. And meanwhile, Luffy and Momonosuke are hearing this bellowing voice in their heads that no one else is hearing. And it's like causing them pain. It's so loud in their heads. And of course, this is because, you know, they're Jack's ship is opening cannon fire on the leg, and they're like, yeah, we don't have to actually deal with, you know, this thing. We're going, you know, this elephant has apparently been alive for a millennium, so its skin should be old and decrepit, and yeah, we can just take it out. But the elephant is trying to communicate with Luffy and Momonosuke. It becomes pretty obvious early on, you know, what the voice is, but Luffy and Momonosuke are confused by it. And the elephant is saying, like, give me the order if you're there. And Luffy is shouting out to the heavens, like, what do you mean, order me? Explain who the hell you are first. And everyone's like, no one's saying anything. So the elephant looks down at Jack's ship and somehow directly communicates this image into Momonosuke's mind. He tells him, Jack's attacking the elephant. And he tells them, you know, exactly where they are. And so everyone's like, okay, we've got to, you know, try and, you know, and stop them. And Kinemon's like, how do you know this? And he says, I don't know, you know, it's just flowing into my mind. I'm scared. And the elephant, of course, warns them, you're all in danger. If I collapse, you know,
you're probably not going to make it.
You're going to drown. So everyone realizes, oh, it's Zoe, the elephant itself, Zunesha, is actually communicating with me. But the elephant explains, and Momonosuke is, like, relaying this to them, that the elephant committed a crime, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How does an elephant commit a crime?
Well, it relates all to this mysterious kingdom in Raftel.
Apparently it's some ancient deed, because he's been walking for, like, a millennium.
Yeah,
so
they notice the only people who have been able to hear his voice were, like, Gold Roger and, you know, Luffy and Mononosuke, like, important people. Mm-hmm. I thought at first it might have been something connected to the Will of D, but we don't see Law reacting to it at all. Although we don't see Law very much in this at all.
So, Mononosuke explains that Zunesha is asking for permission to fight just this once because it has to follow its orders. That's why it's been walking this whole time. It's been forced to follow that order. So, Luffy says, look, I think your voice is going to reach the elephant, so you have to give the command. And he's like, there's no way I can shout that loudly. And he's like, you just gotta do it, or the elephant's gonna die. So, he shouts out for Zunesha to drive the elephant away, and it's like, okay. And it turns its head, it turns it back, and this massive trunk cuts through the water and fucking blocks out the sun as it comes down on Jack's ships and just destroys them. It's so fucking cool. Just this island-sized elephant just wrecks these ships.
And like a full-page spread, too. It's just, it looks fucking beastly.
So I wasn't really expecting this to be the way that the confrontation with Jack to go down. But honestly, if they're like, okay, now he's defeated, I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Well, I don't know if he's 100% defeater, although unless someone rescues him, he'll just drown because he's a double fruit user.
Right.
But I presume that if you made this guy a billion berry bounty, you're planning more with him. I just think this is him getting his early comeuppance.
Right. But yeah, he's served enough at least for now, and everything calms down. So yeah, and there's no more voices that Luffy and Momo are hearing, and the Monkey Scout explains that everything is safe. Zunacia sank the fleet. Monosuke has passed out, I guess, from the stress of the ordeal, and everyone's pondering what the heck happened. And Kinemon's like, "Did Odin know that Momonosuke had this power?" No one seems to really comment on Luffy being able to hear the elephant, but it is interesting that the two of them are special, and like you said, not Law. Not someone else with the will of D. Luffy is very carefree about the whole incident. He's like, "What's going on? Why is everyone looking all gloomy?" He's like, "Well, you know, that was kind of a shocking case." He's like, "Oh, give me food! I'm gonna leave.
Whatever, I'm hungry."
Oh, Luffy. And then we, to cap off the chapter, we briefly cut away to an island in the New World where Kaido has received a communication via Dendenmushi. I don't know if we're supposed to know who
it's,
this is.
Scratch Minapu, because it has pianos for teeth.
Right. Okay.
It took me a moment because the horns confused me, but yeah, it's Apu, or Scratch Minapu, whatever you want to call it.
And he says, yeah, we've lost communication with Jack, and it just cut out all of a sudden. And that's it. Presumably this is going to tie more into Kaido getting pissed off at Straw Hats. Well, of course, they're, going to have some confrontation with them. But, it seems as though Luffy is just gonna set off at this point and go and see if he can get, grab Sanji, as Jack has been momentarily repelled. Maybe he'll pop up again later when they, fight with Kaido more, but, I don't really see him climbing back up onto the elephant for another confrontation immediately.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting chapter. I'm intrigued by the whole communication thing. Also, fucking giant elephant's trunk swing. That's pretty badass. Alright, Toriko. So Jiro kicks ass.
More or less.
Anyway,
World Trigger.
We gotta pick up the pace. That's most of it. There is some important stuff about Jiro revealed, which is that apparently he was raised by wolves. Not just wolves, but by Guinness, the King Battle Wolf, which is pretty pimp. I like him being built up. I hope that, Acacia doesn't just show up and kill him, and now that he's like, "I'm going to unleash my full power now," because it's like, God, this guy's like, are you seriously just going to be like, "This guy is super fast," and then he dies? Like, eh. But yeah. Also, Setsuno is doing some really weird barrier shit in order to prevent Jiro from destroying the world with his strength.
It's actually pretty fucking tits, because you just see her, and she's created this thing, and she's like, "Until I die, you can keep fighting without any worries, Jiro." And you just see, like, an enormous punch from him just ricochets off her bubble, so it doesn't destroy the gourmet world, just floats off into space. Like, that's pretty fucking tits.
But, not an incredible amount of detail to go over the chapter, anyway. So, it was pretty badass, but that's about all I have to say about it. Okay, World Trigger, because we've already been going...
Oh, Nick, let's do it again. Alright, so you're going to be Shaggy from Scooby-Doo again.
Zoinks! Alright. It's chapter 138, Tamakoma 2, part 9. The Rank Wars battle is underway, and we pick up where we left off last time with, as everyone tried to convene together, Katori came across Yuma, and they engaged. I'm not sure exactly what happens in the first bit, but basically, they are countering and dodging each other while they're still racing off in the direction you had set off in. So they're fighting as they run.
Well, she's a gunner at the moment, so I think all the shots you see are her firing, and all the swings are basically Yuma slashing the Trion bullets out of midair. It's a little tough to tell, but they're having like a conflict that's going as they move across this alleyway.
Mm-hmm. Katori's squad are like, oh my god, that
she's
idiot.
An all-rounder. Sorry, not a tanker.
Engaging with him, completely going against their plan, and the operator is just like, go provide support. Get your shit together, man.
Yeah, pick it up.
Or girl, I can't really tell. You're a little bit androgynous. So, yeah, everyone starts to, convene together. They start to come towards Katori and Yuma's location. And, Katori and Yuma keep on fighting. It's a cool little bit where she fires her gun at him at point-blank range, and he manages to get his shield up in time, and you see the bullets, smoking off of it where they hit. Meanwhile, what was his name? Hang on a second.
Oh, Kakizaki?
Kakizaki squad. They're communicating, and they're like, okay, I know where they are. I could, take them out, try to get them out with a backworm. And Kakizaki says, no, don't do that. We're going to make sure that we work together. Everyone is trying to figure out. It's like, oh, look, sniper's in position. Chika communicates this to everybody. Then Mikumo arrives on the scene, and Osamu launches his asteroid at Katori to help provide support. And that reveals his location. So Katori's teammates camouflage themselves and start to engage. But Usami is keeping track of them, and she's like, they're using the Kaminos to pay attention to your radar. And there's this one brief little moment where Osamu looks kind of like a badass. He doesn't really do anything, but he just has his meteor, his asteroid in his hand, and he goes, I'm all ready to go.
Yeah, it's a cool moment because, fucking Jerky McJerkface is over there. It's like, I'll just take out the weak one first, because she gets angry. Because once again, she tried at something, it didn't immediately go her way, and she just gave up on it. So she tries to go after Osamu, and it's like the best panel, because she's going after him, and like all the commentators are like, Osamu got taken out at the start of the last fight. What's he going to do this time? Thwang! She just fucking flips over.
He's like, oh, God, tripped! And so everyone's shocked by this. And then, super cool scene where you see Chika uncloaking from the barrel of her sniper rifle first as she's unveiled. Because, the lightning is revealing her. And she shoots her sniper rifle, and Katori's teammates figure it out just in time. And one of them, raises a shield and gets in the way to block it for Katori. And it, of course, penetrates the shield, and the lead bullet lands in his arm. And it was like, oh, a lead bullet! So Katori's squad has managed to, come together, and they're using their shields to block, bullets from Osamu and so on and so forth. Yuma is coming in as well, and he has this very Spider-Man kind of sequence because he's using the grasshopper to drive himself through the air, but he's also swinging off the spider threads that Osamu has set up, so he's using them to his advantage while they've been posing a disadvantage to everyone else. He doesn't manage to land a killing blow, but he does wound one of the three members. And, Katori then addresses the situation of her teammate having a lead bullet in his arm by chopping the arm off. Makes sense. So, basically, for almost the rest of the chapter, everyone just kind of gushes over how much Tamakoma has improved by implementing these new tactics. And like, oh yeah, they used, Captain Mikumo's wire trigger the spider to combine it with Kuga's high-speed attacks, and then Amatori used lightning in combination with the lead bullet to do serious damage. They've done a lot. And, the color counter is like, yes, it's only visible to the allies. So the spider field is an obstacle for enemies, but it can actually be used as a shield and footing for Kuga. So they're using it really well. So everyone's like, oh yeah, Tonkotu's made big steps. And how will the other two squads react? And we see the Kakizaki squad has managed to meet up together. And Kakizaki says, all right, let's get started.
It's a good chapter. What's interesting to me, though, is they've just revealed all of, well, what we know of their trump cards. Like, we saw right. in the training sequence, Osamu was learning about the spider, and we saw that Chico was learning about using the lightning in combination with the weight bullets. They've shown both of that, and it's a great, it's an awesome, cool sequence, but they didn't get any points off of that. Now, they did get some advantage. They definitely crippled their squad, because they've put damage on the one shooter, and the other one's lost an arm. But still not a point out of it, so...
And also the ones who have been wounded are not the ace.
They're not the ace. So it's still interesting because I'm kind of... Look, Tamakoma 2 is going to come out with the victory here. There's no reason for them not to. They look lame-ish. Like, Yusei shows up, he's like, these are the guys I'm teaming up with? The guys who got served by... I don't even think one of the guys on Kakizaki squad has a full face. it's just eyes. So they're going to win. I'm just kind of curious to see if there's more tricks up their sleeve.
Look, the way that this story is supposed to play out is Tamakoma goes over. That's why AJ Styles beat Jericho at WrestleMania. Wait.
Anything can happen, Nick. Anything. Chavo Guerrero lost his world title in only like 7 seconds. But just the idea, I'm kind of curious to see if it's going to be a new application of the techniques that get used, if there's like a new hidden depth there. It was a moment, though, I really wanted Osamu to get a point there. I really wanted for him to be like, thwang, and just be like, bitch! But...
He's like laid out a minefield as well, so just...
Yeah. I'm still expecting him to get that. But, I mean, this fact alone is enough to show that obviously he's made himself useful. But I'm waiting for that payoff, that shoot and drop. For you, I imagine you were super excited when Sami Zayn finally managed to overcome Neville and win the NXT Championship. When Osamu, like, earns points on his own in a cool manner, that's going to be my moment where I'm just like, ole, 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 oh, crying.
Well, that's the thing, though. He has to win, you know?
Yeah.
If he had won that championship match, he would be like, ah, what was the point?
Yeah, I like,
you know, because that's the way things work, you know. You follow the hero and they try their best and they lose, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, then suck it. You like Roman Reigns, goddammit. You like him like you like Cena.
Cheer for Roman Reigns! Oh, God. Alright, yeah. That's about it. Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with you. This was a pretty cool chapter, but I don't know. I'm not as enthusiastic about it as I know that some people are. Like, I think that this won the...
This barely won the poll. Barely won the poll. One over One Piece.
Mm-hmm. I am not incredibly enthusiastic about this. I think it's really cool to see Tamakoma, you know, see the steps that they've made and see them paying off in an actual rank war. But, yeah. It ain't over until, you know, they actually get the points. We've only seen Tori Squad take wounds. None of them have actually been defeated yet. So, all right. Let's finish things off, though. Let's go over our MVPs and Series of the Week. I was kind of torn on this. I was trying to figure out, I was like, okay, there were some chapters that I liked, but do I give the MVP to this, or do I give the series this, and so on and so forth. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give my favorite series this week to My Hero Academia.
Okay.
I like the chapter pretty much from beginning to end. There were a couple of different characters that I thought of giving the weekly MVP to, primarily Bakugo. But honestly, I thought about giving it to Izuku's mom. For just that one little
line.
Yeah, is
that, like, do you really have to go back?
Do you really have to go back? Yeah, you know, she's reached her breaking point where it's like she's really worried about her son. And, you know, you just need that one moment. And then, you know, of course, Izuku has to be like, I'm sorry, I can't give it up. Yeah, and that's, well, apparently that's the extent of how the conversation went. We don't know if she, like, you know, sighed on, you know, not sighed, but cried on the other end of the phone or what, you know. But, I think that I have to more give it to that chapter overall. And I'm giving my weekly MVP to Zoe the elephant. Because it was just like...
It is pretty tense. My weekly series is going to be My Hero as well. I thought it was a great chapter. A lot of really strong character moments all the way through. And my character MVP, I'm gonna give it to Jiro. I thought that was a cool moment for him. I think it was extremely awesome the way it went. I like the way it kind of ends with him being like, ah, finally I can go all out. We've always known there's a lot of strength to this character, and then seeing this now all come together is like, oh, I'm definitely behind this, and this looks cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, well, that is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you, everybody, who joined us for the show. We record live here on hitbox.tv/RoloT, usually Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change things up. So you should follow us on Twitter to stay updated on any schedule changes that we have to implement. And you can do that by following him, at RoloT, myself, at YRoller of Time, and also the official... at WMR podcast account as well. And we do a lot of stuff related specifically to the podcast with that account. For example, you'll see the straw polls go up on there if you want to vote. So you should keep your eye on that one if you want to have an influence on what chapter next week gets the random voices treatment. And also, you know, you can send your voice suggestions there too. You can check out our past episodes on weeklymogrecap.podbean.com. You can check us out on iTunes. You can check us out on YouTube. Subscribe to that. And if you're checking us out on iTunes, be sure to leave a comment and a rating so that you help out the algorithm.
Which no one did this week!
Be sure to send us criticism, ask us questions for our upcoming Q&A episode, which should be this Sunday. And suggest free manga for us to read as well, and send all that stuff to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. I'll be getting to our next recommendation at the end of this whole spiel. Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy.
Yes, a special thank you to Vluffer and Ian Arter, our newest patrons. So thank you very much to the both of you.
Thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our talk artist. You can check out his work in a bunch of different places like neurocfanboy.deviantart.com, idropboozletumblr.com, patreon.com/Steve Mann, and there are many more that I am not mentioning. Thanks as well to Felix Stark. He's created visual editions of our podcast, as has Infamous Planet, who, as we stated last time, but might as well state again, did part four of our four-part visual of our four-part World Trigger fanfic when Annalisa and myself were forced to play the parts of Osamu and Kitora while Chris enthusiastically narrated and made me hate him for a bit. And of course, he also did this frame here that you see on the visual edition of the show. Alright, so, next time.
Which I'm wondering if that will cause... There might be issues with the YouTube one this week. I didn't think about it before I made Bakugo's theme Kevin Owens theme song.
God.
I'm hoping we don't get, like, a flag for that.
WWE doesn't like that stuff. Who knows?
I'm like, I type Kevin Owens theme song. It comes up a lot of other places, goddammit. We talked over something here.
So, the series that we're going to be talking about next, I looked for a comedy suggestion. In honor of our doing a comedy theme month. And so this series is called Hinamatsuri. I'm just going to read the summary here because I'm not sure if I can actually properly sum up the explanation I've been given myself otherwise. So here it goes. One night, a strange object falls on the head of Nita, a member of the Yakuza. Inside the box is a strange young girl named Hina. She has tremendous supernatural powers, and Nita finds himself reluctantly taking her in. Her powers can come in handy for his Yakuza business, but he also runs the risk of her using them on him. Not to mention, if she doesn't use her powers, she will eventually go berserk and destroy everything around her. Nita and Hina's strange life together is just beginning. The explanation that I've been given is that she gets brought into this Yakuza gang and apparently uses her psychic powers to basically take control of it.
Sounds pretty interesting. And a lot of people in the chat seem to be pretty stoked about this.
So hopefully this is going to be really good. Hopefully we'll have some good things to say about this comedy series, but it was one of the comedy series that I saw that wasn't like, this is a bad series. So
this blows. I don't like you.
So that's going to do it.
You want to see? Well, let's do our send-off as random voices, Nick.
Oh, okay.
All right. So you be Bill Clinton. And no. I'm Edamon, for God's sakes! How often does Edamon pop up?
Well, here's the thing. You thought you were going to be Edamon, but oh, it's going to be me this time. It's going to be Edamon. Now you got to be Bill Clinton.
I did not have sexual relations with Edamon. All right, we're in a pet store. I have this puppy that it's been humping things that I want to hump. Can you please return it for a discount?
Oh, I can definitely fix that right now. All you gotta do is have proper obedience training with this thing, huh?
Yeah,
there ain't nothing but a hound dog humping all the time.
I like that. I like to cut your jib. Let's be friends.